So there's a bunch of people are going to come up in here, probably like cops, maybe different like agents and stuff like that. I don't know if like, you know, there's going to be Germans here. I don't know what's going to happen, right? So I better like play the fool. I better play it crazy. You know what I mean? I better like pretend I'm like the fool in King Lear, yeah. So I can like use my comedic license to slither my way out of this thing. So what I do is I put on like a shower robe, like a shower cap, a mascara, and like lipstick around my eyes, right? And my mouth, and then I jump out, and there's all these police there, like the Garda and stuff like that. Hold on 1 second. There's all these like Garda and police and everything like that,
yeah.
And like hospitals. I mean, like you know, hotel security and shit like that. And I just like jump out of the room, and I just start like dancing around like show tune style. I'm just like, this is my room.
First of all, that's exactly what you should have done. Now they can say like, oh, this guy's he's going crazy. It's fine.
I'm like, this is my room. I'm singing it. Everybody's mouth is agape and silent. I thought I was getting kicked out, but then I got arrested, and I was in.
Where'd you get the lipstick from them?
Clover Hill Prison for a week.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Fucking cowboys. All right, you guys, how are you? Welcome to Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank. I just watched fucking Cowboys wide receiver fumble the ball to 1 yard line. They're driving to get down by 1-2. Anyway, hi, everybody. How are you? Welcome to Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank. I'm Ari Shaffir. On today's episode, I have New York comedian John F. O'Donnell. I got the word on him. Well, I mean, I've met him before and I've seen him around. But then I got the word that, man, it's like weird. I look for problems in people's lives. I think it'd be fun to explore. So I get happy every time I hear somebody fucks up. John has manic depression. And he gets these weird delusions. It's a fumble. All right, it's a touchback. So, and he, yeah, did he go out of the end zone? No. So he has delusions of grandeur. He thinks he gets, you know, psycho. That's what they said. And I was like, oh, interesting. Instantly, I'm like, oh, I would love to be a part of that. Like, I want to hear it. So I asked him, and he met me at the park in Brooklyn, in Bushwick, at some park, and we talked about it. It was a cool conversation. So here it is, you guys. No sponsors this week, so just make sure to click on the Amazon link on my website, arithegreat.com. Also, Punch Drunk, the sports podcast we do, me and Tripoli and Tebow, we have a new website now called punchdrunksports.net. I don't know why it's .net. But that's what they've gone with. So check that out. We have a forum there. But if you want to click for shop for Amazon, go through arithegreat.com, click on it, and then there's an Amazon link. You can click on that, and it takes you to Amazon. Then I get percentage back from whatever you guys buy. So that helps keep me afloat. Thank you for those who have done it already. And if you forget, just bookmark my website, arithegreat.com. Bookmark that as Amazon. It'll be fine. Then you won't forget. Why do they play out the last minutes of a game? It's over. You guys, also, let me do some dates really quick. I'm in Boston. I don't think I've announced this yet. I'm in Boston the week right after Thanksgiving, like the 30th and 29th of November at some new club. Check my website for details. I'll be in San Francisco October 10th, 11th, 12th with Joey Diaz. After I get back from Cabo. And we're shooting my storyteller show Tuesday, October 1st. If you're in the area, we need people to come to the first show. The first show's great, actually. The lineup. It's all travel stories. And it is Moshe Kasher from the Champs podcast. He's been on this podcast, too, once or twice. And he's very funny. And he's done this storyteller show like 5-6 times. He's always really good. So we tried to get him last time, but he was gone or out of town or something. That's the same thing. So we got him this time. Then Fortune Feimster, one of the Chelsea people, but she's a lesbian, so it doesn't count. And Kurt Brunhall on that show. Trevor Moore from The Whitest Kids You Know, David Koechner from Anchorman, and Joe Rogan from the Joe Rogan Experience fight contest. Yeah, I've heard Rogan's story. It's great. Moshe, I've heard probably three of them. I don't know which one he's going to do. Maybe he'll do a new one. I don't know. But it's going to be great. So it's at 7:30. Doors open at 7. They say come there at 7. So sign up. There's a link on my website right at the bottom of this page or of last week's podcast page. It's not on the side. It's on the podcast page. It'll be right at the bottom. So come to the first show. We need people. And we also probably are going to need extras. If anybody wants to come and get what they said is VIP treatment, which means like you guarantee yourself a seat before everybody else. We need extras at like 4 p.m. A few dude extras. I don't know. If you want to, hit me up on Twitter. Let me know if you can come, and I'll tell you the details. But yeah, I'm excited, you guys. And the second show is great. We got as many reservations as we can take for that. But if the people from the first show, or if you couldn't make a reservation, if you want to just come, there's always a chance we're going to squeeze in everybody we can. We're going to pack in everybody we can in that. And the second show is, I'll be happy to introduce my friends in Los Angeles to Big J Okerson. Joey Diaz is doing it. Kurt Braunholer from Hot Tub. Kumail Nanjiani. And there's one other. Oh, Renazizi. Steve Renazizi from the league. So, and Jeff Dye is doing the first one also for my basketball team. It's the two great lineups, and we got them into specific topics. We didn't even go broad this time. I'm really stoked. So, come on Tuesday, everybody, and they'll start airing in November. That's when they'll start showing again on the web. So, thanks for supporting the first one, and let's just keep making cool shit, right? I worked on my story. So, I have one story that's pretty good, and I know it already. I've told it a bunch of times at parties and stuff, and that's good. But my other story is like, I told it once, sort of, like a long time ago at a show. I think like a third or fourth show we ever did like 3 years ago, and I haven't really told it since then. So I had to go over it. It wasn't that good. And the cool thing about New York for this travel story is I had six sets on Friday at the Stand and Stand Up New York. I ran back and forth, and this is what Burr was talking about, I'm assuming. He said, if you work that time, you can really use it to your advantage. And yeah, I worked on that set six straight times, really like analyzing like where it needs work. It's way better now. It sucks too. The first one or two times, I'm like, why am I doing this? This isn't good. This is not good. When you do one of those stories at a stand-up show, a lot of times it's way too slow for a stand-up show. So it seems weird. And the crowd gets like, what are you doing? For the storyteller show, everybody knows what we're doing, so they get into it. But when you don't know, it's like, this is slower. So I rarely like open with them, but if it's a 10-minute long story and I only have 10 minutes, what choice do I have? Anyway, so yeah, you guys, it's fucking working out. And I had three more sets on Saturday and fucking worked them out there too at the Stand. Yeah, it's cool. This Cabo thing, I'm going to Cabo right after this on Wednesday, and it'll be perfect vacation time. A bunch of comics there. We'll probably try to find stuff. It's easy to find drugs in Mexico, right? The light drugs, weed and mushrooms. It's easy. It's got to be easy in Mexico to find them. Come on. Anyway, you guys, so here we go. With John F. O'Donnell, what have I got? San Francisco. I got Austin coming up. Check my website. Boston, St. Louis with Diaz. And then that's it. And I'm going to Switzerland. Yeah, I'm going to Switzerland in December to judge some Swiss comedy contest. I'm not going to judge it, but I'll fucking give my feedback and go to Switzerland for a week. Does my brother live in Switzerland? Where's Zurich? Maybe that's Switzerland. Maybe I'll go visit my brother. See that kid. See my nephew. All right, you guys, here we go. Let's start. Thanks for listening, everybody. Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank episode. I'm going to record a bunch of podcasts from the beach of Cabo, too. I know I'm getting DeRosa. I want to get Brett Ernst about being a loudmouth, and then who knows what else. Nikki Glaser, I was going to get her, but she had to cancel. Anyway, here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, Ari Shaffir, Skeptic Tank, episode 134. That's a complete guess. It might be 135. Complete guess. Episode 134, Maniac with John F. O'Donnell. Get it? Because he's manic depression, so I assume that means you're a maniac. All right, here we go. Enjoy.
Depression's searching my soul. just don't know how to go about getting feeling sweet feeling drops from my fingers. Manic depression has captured my soul.
Also, I just start. So let's just start.
Oh, cool.
Where are we?
We're in Maria Hernandez Park, man, in Bushwick.
Fucking Hernandez, man.
Yeah.
That's a lifelong drunk, right?
Yeah, that guy's definitely been boozing up pretty hard for a long time.
He's got a coat with a, I think, a different jacket underneath.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a little bit of wind going on, but it's definitely not.
No, he's using that for later. He's bulking up. I have my knapsack that I'm, put my jacket in, but yeah. He's,
you know how people, they'll cover their beer with like a small paper bag?
No, this guy had a full one. Like he's got like a lunch for two.
It's really
brother
big.
And sister. Share with your share with Margaret. Just bring her lunch too. Oh, nice deep cough too.
That was awesome.
Oh. He coughs the way like toddlers cry when they're done crying. Like he's like forcing it out.
That was really unhealthy, man. Have you ever seen anybody crumble to the floor of alcoholism during one of your podcast recordings?
No, I've never seen that. If he does, though, we might go for the new podcast topic and just go talk to that guy.
And it's wild. So we got that guy chilling. We got some skateboard kids.
Some skateboarders, some BMXers. Is that what they're called? Bikers?
I guess so. BMXers doing some tricks.
Are they still called BMXers? BMX is just the brand name of the bike, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Is that like not as popular anymore? I bet they've changed the term.
I don't know, man.
I don't know anything about it anymore. No, but even the X Games, don't they call it the BMX?
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's like an event, right?
Yeah, for sure. Do you think the bikers and the skateboarders get along, or is there like a thing?
I think, from what I've heard, I have no idea. At the X Games, I think they get along, because they're like, oh yeah, we have our times.
Yeah, yeah.
But when they're competing for, I don't know, for rail space, maybe they don't. Wow.
Whoa, that was cool.
Yeah, he didn't land it, though.
No, he didn't.
You know what you see a lot now? This used to be just a West Coast thing, but now I see it everywhere. Black skateboarders.
Yeah.
It was a real like Brazilian and San Diego, LA kind of thing that, you know, they would find skateboards, but now it's fucking moved everywhere. That was 15 years ago.
Well, there's some Latin skateboarders here.
Yeah. Yeah. I count that as black.
Okay, cool. Anything not white is black.
I mean, we can only... No. It doesn't count. Jews are white.
Oh,
Asians
are
white.
Yeah. Asians are so white, man.
Asians are so white, yeah. I mean, they're yellowish, but...
You know? No, but I mean just like socially, right?
Yeah, they're socially white. That's what I mean, socially.
Sometimes I meet white people and I'm like, oh, you make me look Puerto Rican because they're so white.
Yeah. Asian people?
Asian people.
Or white people in general.
You know what I want to do, already, that I've never gotten to do? I want to hook up with a... Westernized Indian chick, you know, like an Indian chick that wears like a North Face jacket.
Oh, know? Yeah. I had this girl in my college, Sumi something, Sumi. She was pretty westernized. She told everybody that we fucked and I was still a virgin and we hadn't fucked.
Why?
I've never gotten this before. I don't know. We made out. We kissed a couple times.
Do you think that she was so kind of physically conservative that she thought that was fucking?
I don't know, but I remember Danielle. She married Max. I forget her last name.
Dude, teenage Latin chick skateboarders.
Where? Oh.
Right there.
Oh, yeah. She's got... Nah, it's a longboard. They're just getting around. It's a whole different thing. I used to go to the Beverly Center in L.A. and just fucking stare at the 16-year-old Mexican chicks with their fucking fat thighs, but it was all smooth. So you get like, ooh, I'm still sort of into it.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
That's when I came up with smooth fat, where it's like... It's chubby, but not in a gross way.
It's that like youth fat. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Yeah.
It's like, you're holding it together, you little big old piece of.
Everything's still, it's large, yeah. but tight
and
at the same time.
Like slightly olive or brown, you know? It's
yeah.
like, oof.
Do you know, the truth is, man, like I would.
Let's see, look, she's trying to get on the skateboard. You would what?
I would never make love to a white woman again if a black woman would say hello to me. You
really?
Know what I mean? I like to say that, even though the last girl I dated was black.
So that's not true.
It's not true.
I hooked up with a black chick. Was that the first black chick you've been with?
No.
I've only been with one.
I've been with a couple and a bunch of Asian women, but no, really, you know what? Besides making out, no Latin women or Indian women.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah.
There was this girl, Tanya, in my acting class, and we used to like hook up after class, and when we take breaks together, And we'd go up in the stairwell and just fucking hook up.
Really? At the acting class?
At the acting class. I finger blast her sometimes.
That's dirty.
S my D.
Really? Just right at the acting while you were like studying Meisner?
In the, in, like upstairs. Like, oh, I'm going out to prepare for a second. I go to the bathroom. She would follow. And we just like quickly do it. Not to completion ever, but like, yeah, Tanya. And then she got a boyfriend and we just stopped hooking up.
That happens, man.
Yeah.
But why, I feel like that's the best part of the acting class.
Oh, yeah. You know? That everybody, okay, here's why acting class is great. For that reason. It's the girls are...
so insecure, right?
Yes. They're actresses.
Yeah.
And they're amongst other actresses. So one, they're not the hottest girl in the room. Like, none of them are. Even the hottest girl in the room still looks at someone else like, well, her hair is nicer than me. I'm like,
yeah,
maybe, but the rest of you is way hotter than her. But they don't even tell them
so
that.
So they don't have that power trip thing going.
No, right, exactly. Auditions, fucking all the hot girl auditions, when they all come in, especially for commercials, when they just want someone who reads as a hot girl.
Yeah.
They don't need you to do much other than walk sultry. Yeah, there's 50 of them there. They've never felt so insecure. But also, they're fun and youthful at acting class. So it's the type of person that wants to just hook up. And they see other hot guys in the acting class. And so most of them are like, oh, I want to go with a hot guy. But the one out of like... when they're like, oh, I'm done with hot guys, it's only one funny dude.
And that's when
you get all that. There's 15 girls. Yeah, 10 are usually going to go for the hot guy. But the other five.
They want the funny dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like it's good. I feel like an acting class, an audition, it reduces a hot woman to not having any kind of other aspects of her personality besides being
good-looking.
Yeah,
plus their failures in acting class. Because, like, why are you there? You're not working. You know who's not here? Natalie Portman.
I feel like that's the saddest thing, to just be an actor.
What do you mean?
To just be an actor?
Yeah.
To not
I don't know
create
how they
your
get,
own content or something?
I don't know how they get like agents or managers. Like,
it's horrifying.
See, you do what? You got to get into play or something. Who does plays?
It's horrifying, dude.
Yeah.
I don't respect them.
What, actors?
Oh, some I do. I don't know.
Yeah, some. You know what it is? It's that the rest of them get lumped in with like Philip Seymour Hoffman's.
I know.
No, that guy's great.
I know. That guy's
awesome. Great.
But you know what's really funny?
Who says, I want my job to be movie star. Like, that's not a job.
Fuck you.
Actress
fuck you. Yeah,
job,
exactly. Unless
star.
You have like this burning desire in your belly that you have to like portray characters of the souls of the damned in order to give them a voice, then I respect you. But if you're just like some wanker that wants to be famous for the sake of being famous.
One of the most overrated jobs in the world.
Yeah. But I mean, it's
what
so.
What are you going to say about it?
Glorified and beloved, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm like, you didn't even write this. All the screenwriters, they always get their award for like Oscars like way before it even starts. Like, oh, and by the way, this guy wrote the best. Like, that's without that.
I know.
We could have gotten Tia Leone instead of fucking Julia Roberts. Same difference.
Nobody gives a fuck about the writers.
Shh, nobody.
They're very marginalized.
They put it together. You know why? It's because Hollywood fucking just like bought screenwriters. Like, hey, write this stupid Godzilla movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
It's the same shit. So nobody respects that either. But good screenwriters are good.
That's true.
How long have you lived in New York?
Like 9 years.
Nice.
Yeah.
What is he? You think?
I don't know. He's
I saw
got...
him doing a flip ollie before, which nobody really does.
That was cool. Is he Latin?
I don't know. He's like Latin or Asian. You know what I see a lot of here?
Oh, shit.
It's all right. He's okay. I see a lot of mixed race here.
Yeah. He like looks maybe like Asian Filipino.
Yeah,
like Filipino.
But like not quite Filipino enough. There's like something else in there.
Yeah.
I know it's already... Chinese and Mexican, but
you know it's funny because we are the only white people in this park. It's almost like we're social anthropologists right now, just commenting on other cultures.
Yeah,
that are going on here. It's a little fucked up, you know.
Degenerates in the mist. there it is. It's a flip one.
Nice.
Nolly, that's what it's called.
It's an ollie,
I used to know the terms. Did you skateboard ever?
No, well, I did a little bit, but I just couldn't get it. I wasn't that good at it.
Bobby Lee taught me how to skateboard a little bit.
Oh, really?
Duncan Trussell, a few guys. But he used to laugh at me. And then his friend Levin, who was like a legit skateboarder, like a professional, would always make fun of him. I was like, how do you know these tricks, Bobby? Like from BBAA? X trigger? Is that which, how you know these tricks, Bobby? He goes, I skate. He goes, you don't skate as good as I do.
You piece of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not good at stuff like this, I guess.
My mom wouldn't let me skateboard because she's afraid I would hurt myself.
Where'd you grow up?
Maryland.
Maryland. I grew up in Jersey. See, I don't know if you guys know this listening, but me and Ari, we don't know each other so well.
Where did we meet?
We probably didn't meet till New York, till shows, till maybe...
Yeah, but I feel like I met you before. When I first saw you, I was
yes!
like, I know you from somewhere.
I think I remember. I met you in Portland briefly at...
Bridgetown?
Bridgetown.
Oh, okay.
A bunch of years back.
Yeah, what a fun festival.
It was great. Yeah, what, it was great.
Were you there trying to lift that car off the tracks?
No. What happened?
It wasn't Mark Norman, but it was somebody. I might have been with Mark Norman. Maybe he was there that year. But we were driving to that after party.
Yeah, that place where all
the
after parties.
Just give you free paps and donuts the whole time. But yeah. And there was this like turn that looks like you can turn on the tracks onto the, like, train tracks. You had to go all the way around and then back, but it looked like a street. I was like, turn around there. I was in the back, and the guy's like, okay. I'm like, no, it's just train tracks. But then he went like another 10 yards and then turned. He was like, fuck it, I'll turn anyway. And then what happens is it starts like the train tracks are on the street, and then it sort of dips, and the train tracks stay up, like the street dips.
Yeah.
So then it's higher. So we drove on the streets and on the pebbles for a while, trying to make it from one street to another. And then because the rails got way higher than the ground, our wheels were just off the ground, and we just skated
on the tracks. I'm remembering this now as you're telling this story.
And we're like, fuck. And then we're like, we got to do something right now. So we ran into the place. We're like, guys, help us.
Oh, yeah.
Help us lift this thing off the tracks. Fairbanks was there. I remember Fairbanks was there, Chris Fairbanks. And like, we had like 10 comics trying to lift. You know how in those Mentos commercials, they all lift it off?
Yeah, yeah.
Not as easy. I mean, it wasn't a big car either.
Really? Even with Fairbanks, dude? That dude is fucking huge.
10 drunk comics. We all picked up. We all threw our backs out at the same time. And then, we couldn't get it. And then I was like, dude, we have to call the cops. He's like, why? I'm like, we're on train tracks.
Fucking train tracks,
the train
dude.
Is going to come. I forgot who was driving, but I was like, have you had anything to drink? You got to tell me right now.
And yeah.
It was zero. I'm like, I'm going to call the cops. We have to.
No, I remember Andy Wood, like, flipping out about this.
Why? It was great.
Well, he's just being really, he was like, you got to get this fucking fixed.
Oh, yeah. So the cops came, and they breathalyzed him, but like smelled his breath like real hard. They're like, if you told me you had a drop of alcohol, we're taking you to jail.
Wow.
But he didn't, so they just towed it off.
Fuck, man.
They said it happens a lot. So Bridgetown, that's where you were. Okay.
Yeah, we met there briefly, and then I think New York.
Did you start here? Or did you start in Portland area?
I started actually in Ann Arbor, Michigan, like outside of Detroit.
Oh.
A long
time ago.
Is there
a scene there?
There was at the time. Like, I went to school out there. And
at
then,
Michigan?
I mean, the first shows I ever did were, like, mics in New York, because I grew up in Jersey. But I essentially kind of at least initially got my legs out there, like, touring around Michigan and Ohio and stuff like that.
While you were in college?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck yeah. Wow.
And then, like, and then I stay there
did
a year after.
UMich?
I did.
Did anybody call it UMich, or did I just make that up?
Yeah, some people call it UMich. I mean, I wouldn't. It sounds weird. You know what I mean?
Did you get the thing? My friend Avi went there. Yeah. Is that what they call it?
It's U of M. I don't care. I mean, I like the school, but it's really weird to me when somebody's got
pride,
absurd school pride that like becomes the defining thing of their life.
Yeah,
you know?
They go to alumni stuff, they hang out, and you're like, dude, you just went there for a few years.
There's University of Michigan people that are nuts about that shit.
I'll meet some other people who also randomly applied there as their safety school and got in.
Who didn't get into an Ivy League
school. Like, what are you talking about?
It's really weird how people define themselves by shit like that.
Yeah, you know, my friend said that, though, that the one fun thing he had was that the thaw that would come on their everybody's noses during class, like exactly 10 minutes into class on cold days, the first guy would go,
and then
two poor people, and everyone's nose would thaw at the same time.
Yeah, Michigan gets pretty fucking cold. But I really liked it out there. Ann Arbor's a cool town. There's a good comedy scene at the time. It was like, there's a bunch of comedians that ended up moving to the coast and doing some things. Like, we all sort of started at the same time.
Yeah.
It was like, Jesse Pop was there.
Oh, wow.
Vince Averill, Brent Sullivan.
I don't know any of them.
Megan Gans.
Oh, yeah, sure.
She writes a lot. Juwan Lee, I don't think you'd know. But then, like, Matt Manser and Paul Malowitz and stuff like that.
Matt Manser, I've heard of. I met him.
Yeah, so it was like, we were all doing this Tuesday night show at this bar called the Heidelberg. It's called the Tuesday Night Tickler.
I love how people have to, when did that start? We had to name shows.
I don't know.
Dumb. Like, this show is called this. I'm like, just show, say Tuesday. Is it the, what's it called, place?
I don't know. You come up with a nonsensical name, you know what I mean? And it makes it cool or whatever.
Yeah, I spent like a week trying to think of my name for my storyteller show.
Really?
Yeah, we all like brainstormed too for a while.
I watched some of their on demand. I watched a few episodes.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
They're really good.
Thanks.
Man. It's cool.
Yeah, we're about to do more.
Nice. And I like the intro title sequence. Looks really dope. Who
we're
did
gonna
that?
We're going to do another one where we're going to, I have to take fight choreography on Monday.
For it?
Yeah. They're going to do this crazy thing because not all the comics can be there because everyone has like shooting stuff or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And so let's do something else. We're just fighting a bunch of people. in like that slow motion type thing. That's all Jeff Tomczyk. He's great.
That's fucking awesome. So we're talking right now, but like, I'm sure in Ari's mind, the wheels are spinning to figure out how to organically.
No, I already decided.
Transition.
I was going to.
Oh, okay.
My question was going to be, were you crazy in Michigan?
Oh, nice. Good question.
When did it start?
It did start in Michigan, man. Oh, my God. It's been a fucking disaster.
Wait, was there a period of your life, before we get into it, where I'll do an introduction so people will know more what's going on. So you don't have to worry about, like, wait, what's my name even? John F. O'Donnell. It'll all be there in the intro. But
it's all
was
good,
there
man.
A period, I always wonder about the people who have, like, was there, okay, I don't know if it was a snap or something, but and even it's sort of like a slow devolution into madness. But like, there were times, second, third grade, where you were completely, like, you didn't feel any of it or even see any symptoms, did you?
No, it was way longer than that. It didn't happen until my sophomore year of college.
So yeah. So freshman year, you're completely, like, no symptoms whatsoever?
No, I mean, no symptoms of, like, manic depression, like, no manic episode or anything like that.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? But it was basically, I think I know what happened, you know? Like, when I was in high school, I had some pretty gnarly acid trips, which I think for a lot of people that's not a big deal, but I guess because of some sort of sensitivity to my brain chemistry, that probably brought to the forefront maybe something that might have
I've heard about that a lot, with
dormant
the acid being able
or
to
set something
it off.
Like that, you know? So that, but then I think that also, like, coupled with this weird worldview, like, I never grew up religious, but when I was in high school, I had this, like, proselytizing Catholic guy who somehow was teaching public school, and he was like teaching Latin, and he was like indoctrinating us, like, if we didn't, like, you know, live our life in a certain way, we were gonna burn in hell. And for some reason it, like, yeah, worked in our brains.
Do I want a chocolate? What kind of chocolate do you have?
Dipping chocolates.
Dipping chocolates?
Different.
How much are they?
We gotta get a chocolate.
It's probably tough to not get that, right? What do you guys do? Are you guys all in school?
Yeah.
Nice.
Thank
you.
Oh
wow, you got different kinds of chocolates?
Yeah.
What's your favorite?
Oh, these are really good.
My favorite is
milk chocolate's pretty good. Have you had caramel?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah,
we'll don't worry about it.
Dark.
You're hooking
me up,
gonna
dude? Get a caramel.
Yeah, I got a dollar right here.
Nice. All right. Let's get a caramel and it's milk chocolate. What do you want?
Well, I mean, caramel sounds good, but we might as well try two different ones.
Yeah.
And
do you want
them.
WF Crisp or milk chocolate?
WF Crisp.
Yeah, okay. Let's try that.
Oh,
thanks,
thank
guys.
You. Thank you. Cool. Is this for something? For fun?
Yeah.
Cool.
Nice.
Have a good one.
Pick the right guys. Always look for white stoners. Thank you.
Oh, my God. That one girl's amazing, dude. She's going to be like, she's a great saleswoman.
Yeah. It looks like it's Catholic school outfits, right, with the plaid, but they're not all wearing that.
Yeah. But the other two are wearing the same dress, but it's just a dress.
Yeah. Oh, it's got McDonald's on it? Oh, enjoy one complimentary large sandwich when a second large sandwich or equal of greater value is purchased.
Oh, this is bonus chocolate, dude.
Yeah, I'm never gonna purchase a second large sandwich.
No.
I'll go.
I don't eat a McDonald's.
No, me neither.
Because, you know.
Once I saw the pink slop, I was like, okay, I'm out.
No, that shit's gross.
Plus,
I guess it judges people that eat there and shit. You know, it's like all around good.
Give that up. So, okay. So, sorry.
No, it's okay. That was awesome. But, I mean, like.
So, you think the LSD set it off?
I'm not sure because there was definitely a genetic disposition towards mood disorders, you know?
Yeah.
Like, my grandfather had something going on, and, like, my mother deals with some stuff more of the kind of depressive side, my brother a little bit. But I'm the only one that's experienced these, like, extreme manic episodes where, like, my thoughts are racing like crazy. I have all these grandiose thoughts. I get very.
I want to get into what happens
messianic
with it,
and shit like that.
Yeah, but I don't want to miss anything. So I want to.
Okay.
I want to see.
But
like,
basically, the beginning was like. Yeah, but I don't know if it was like conflicting, like having this conflicting worldview of thinking I was going to like burn in hell forever if I didn't live a certain way.
Wait, who got you religious?
This teacher, but his name was Dr. Bond in a public school. Nice. And I was taking Latin class. Like, I so wish I just took fucking wood shop instead, like a normal person, you know? Yeah, because I was studying Spanish, and then as my other elective, I took Latin with like six other kids.
Yeah.
And he used this like stupid, tricky argument. Like, he would say, like, well, there must be objective truth, because if you say there's no such thing as objective truth, you're professing an objective truth by saying that, thus you're contradicting yourself. It's just some stupid semantics argument. Yeah, but then he like equated that with like the Catholic Church. Yeah, let's try this one here.
Pop one open there.
Okay, cool.
Individually wrapped.
Yeah, I haven't. Oh, they are?
I mean, not individually wrapped, but they break off easy. Whatever
they
that's
break
called.
Off it easy.
Pieces.
All right, cool. Yeah, we'll open this one later.
Okay.
Because I fucked it up a little bit. Yeah, so...
So you said there's no objective truth. Oh, there is objective truth.
Yeah, and so it's like... So if you say there's no such thing as objective truth, you're stating an objective truth by saying that. So he was, like, rejecting relativism and shit like that. But...
What's an objective truth?
I mean, something that's, like...
Even not in reality.
Something that's true regardless of somebody's opinion of it. Like that your birth name is Ari or something like that. But more like morally speaking.
Oh, right. It's wrong to kill.
Yeah.
Well, that would not be universally accepted. But like mostly, but then some people say, what do you mean it's not wrong to kill? What if...
Yeah, I guess that's what it is. It's as we're saying it out loud right now, it's embarrassing and ridiculous that I got sucked into his weird religious web. But... I don't know.
Wait, how does this turn to religion?
Well, he would, like, equate it with the Catholic Church. Like, he would say, like, the Catholic Church claims to be the one true religion, the only one that believes in objectivity or something, so they must be the right religion. And the tenets of it say that if you don't live your life in a certain way, you're going to burn in hell forever or something like that. And then he was also using, like, philosophy stuff.
Okay.
Like Plato's allegory of the cave and stuff like that to be like, see, people think they're living in a certain way, but they're really staring at shadows, and that's what's going on with society.
That's always the leap, where it's like, okay, Plato's cave, he was really staring at shadows, like, and that's what's going on with society. It's like, at that point, it's like, whoa, you have to prove that that's what's going on with society. Yeah. You can't just say it's similar.
Yeah.
All the religious stuff. I went to see this conference for some show, for Rogan's show. It was this 2045 conference.
Yeah.
These people, have you heard about it?
No.
They're trying to secure death by 2045.
Really?
They're trying to figure out the ways to do it, either by repairing the body, making the body not fail.
Wow.
Which is like, you know, fake limbs, whatever it is. Like anything that breaks down, like have it not break down anymore. You'll cure it that way. Or robotics that'll help with the body and whatever. Or have your mind completely, every synapse and neuron of your mind completely mapped out. Not just theoretically, but completely mapped out to the point where you just like, it's just a machine at that point. If you map out everything, you can download that into a computer, and then your consciousness will move on.
And that consciousness can exist in a way forever?
Mm-hmm. And you can have multiple consciousnesses out there, because, like, make copies of it. You know? It becomes like Dollhouse and stuff, but they think by 2045 they can do that.
Really?
Yes. But they also, at this conference, they had roboticists, like top-level roboticists, this billionaire, this Russian billionaire who owns, like, TMZ in Russia. He wants it. He's like 35. He wants it by the time he's like 75. You know, he wants it.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I can do this. I have the money. Let's use it. And so really, he's just bringing all these people together. He's bringing the roboticists and the neurologists, and he's bringing them all together. He's like, guys, talk. Talk to each other.
Yeah.
Give a speech, but then talk to each other. And they're available for interviews and stuff also. But they had religious people talking about it too. Like, what would happen if we have artificial intelligence and all these bishops and rabbis? And this rabbi, I remember him talking, and he goes, it's like a rose. It's beautiful, but then when you peel back the layers, life is this. And you want to be like, no, that's not based in science. But I remember hearing all those arguments when I was religious, and I was like, you can't just say, oh, it's like this, so therefore it's all like that.
Yeah.
It's not a complete easy metaphor. It doesn't match up one-to-one.
No, not at all. It's really weird, man. I don't know. But it's weird. It's like certain people's brains get trapped in that forever, especially if you're super young and then you're totally mind-fucked forever.
So he said there is universal truth. So one of the universal truths must be that Catholics are the real religion.
Yeah, yeah.
Leap.
It's fucking total leap. And the Plato's allegory, the cave thing, whatever. But it was like, I don't know. I don't know why.
So you got religious?
I didn't get religious. I just had this fear that if I didn't live a certain way, I was going to burn in hell. And I think having that belief system with the LSD and then being around really shitty people while I was doing it who were, like, fucking with me when I was freaking out instead of being,
on the LSD?
Yeah, which is really cruel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was, like, the first time I
hate people who fuck with people on drugs. Just let them have their trip.
Yeah,
people like when they start talking like, rah, rah, how you? Listen,
it's like, dude, my mind is already melting here.
Acid
like,
is undefeated in like 1,000 years or however long it's been going on.
Yeah,
acid mushrooms, they'll do their job. They don't need your help.
Exactly,
they'll be
pieces
fine.
Of shit, like I went to a fish show.
Yeah,
at Madison Square
Garden.
That's
where you get acid, at the parking lot to a fish concert.
Yeah, yeah, and it was like then what was fucked up was my first time doing it. And it was with these like, I was with these like kind of more druggy kids that I don't even know why I was with them. Like, it was like a last minute thing that I went to this show with them, and you know, they were more like fish heads and shit like that. But like, They're probably still going to fucking shows. But actually, no. One of them probably is, or is maybe dead, and the other one became a fucking cop. So crazy. So crazy.
That did happen, or that's probably what happened?
It did happen.
Oh, wow.
So fucking weird. But so that, and then... but I didn't start tripping until... I don't know if the other guy's dead. But
if I what?
I don't know if the guy's dead. I know the other guy's a cop. But then I didn't start tripping until like the car ride home. In, like, the car.
Oh, right. It hit you way later, huh?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Through the whole Phish concert?
Well, I guess I took it towards, like, the latter part of it or something
when
like
that. When you're like, oh, let me feel comfortable first. Yeah, it takes a little while to kick in.
Ugh.
Me and Joey Diaz did it. Went to go see The Wall. They were doing The Wall again.
Yeah, yeah.
Roger Waters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whoever's left. And we're like, we're going. All we heard was, you can't sit in the corners because it's all a visual. So you got to, corners, you'll get a weird look view. So we went to Scout. They played for, like, 10 straight days in L.A. And we went for the last show. And by then, scalping tickets was really difficult. And we took this acid on the subway over. It hadn't kicked in. We could only find tickets in the way corner. And we're like, you know what? Why spend $350? This shit's not even kicked in. Let's just forget about it. So we walked away. We're just like, let's just call it. And as we left, that's when it kicked in. We're like, fuck, we're downtown L.A. This is the worst place to be on acid right now.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
How did you navigate?
Well, we went to this diner. it's called, I forget what it's called. It's open 24 hours. It's always been there. The Pantry downtown.
Yeah.
And we're like, let's just go eat, sit there and eat something and like try to like, and so we ate and immediately dropped a check on us. And we're like, oh no, we're not ready. And that's when he would start getting real far away. Like he was sitting across the table from me, this far away. And then it was like him, like a Picasso painting where he was like really far away and up some.
Wow.
Yeah. Like space got real weird.
So this is the thing with me and drugs, why I can't do them. Like I can't even smoke weed. Like if I smoke weed, it could trigger a manic episode. And that's what happens to me. That's just reality of what I know from doing it.
Even weed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Was that before the LSD?
No. But okay. Also, I had a bad experience with weed the first time I got high. I was hanging out with these really shitty people. And it was like I was with my soccer team. And we were in Italy my sophomore year of high school.
Yeah.
Right? Which was weird because we weren't even like good for New Jersey. So I don't even know why we went out there. We were getting our ass kicked by all these European teams and stuff like that. And it's like, I moved to a new place for high school, and a lot of people were really shitheads. It was like, they were like these like waspy fashion hippie type people that would wear like a Grateful Dead t-shirt, but then like a J. Crew roll neck sweater on top of it. And they were just pretty mean spirited.
Herbert eventually figured that out. It was like, we'll just make them new and sell them for $25.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Just buy it.
Yeah, exactly. But, so the first time I got high, like I remember I was in Italy and we were in like the hotel room. And I was just, like, laughing uncontrollably, and I was having, like, so much fun. But then, like, I remember the night before, this, like, the goalie on our team was really kind of, like a made fun of a lot or whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, he wasn't...
Because he was fat?
Because he was Asian.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Like, it was shitty. Like, I remember, like, when they found out that I was half Jewish, they were fucking calling me, like, Jew bag and shit. They were really fucked up people, yeah. but it was all, like, that bullshit, like, suburban psychological abuse. Everybody was just
purpose to be mean.
Yeah, yeah.
I get that at the Comedy Store, but that's all just, like, friendly.
Yeah, no, but it was, like, yeah, of course, but it wasn't like that. But, I mean, I don't give a fuck, but I don't give a fuck. I'm just giving you some backstory context,
on
I guess,
who they
right?
were, yeah.
You know what I mean? But, so anyway, I got, like, high, and I was, like, laughing and, like, loving everything. And what they did to the kid before is, like, they tied him up with all this, like, medical tape and put him underneath, like, a shower and, like sprayed, like, soap in his eyes and shit
the
like
Asian
that.
The Asian kid?
Yeah, yeah.
What?
Yeah, yeah. So, that's what they did to him. So, the next day when I was, like, super baked and, like, laughing and everything like that, they did that to me.
Oh, boo.
So, it was so fucked. It was, like, my first foray into this. And I've described it. It was, like, the only way to describe that spectrum of emotions is if I was... watching Richard Pryor's Live on the Sunset Strip while simultaneously being waterboarded. You know what I mean?
Laughing and feeling pain, pain.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what were they doing to you?
So then they just like tie me up with medical tape, like they just have them put me in the shower and shit. Yeah, it's fucked. It's fucked. But so then I think then after that, whenever I would smoke, I'd get like really burnt immediately and really in my head. And then I was like,
"What? You're afraid of it happening again?"
I don't know. I wasn't consciously upset about it. It was just whatever was going on with me. But this is what I wanted to ask you. Like when you were tripping in downtown LA, like what I don't have is I never have that piece of my brain that works for me to remember that I'm on a drug, to have that little bit of narrative distance.
No, most people don't have it.
Really?
I eventually had to work up to that.
Really?
With enough mushrooms and enough like
I feel like most
heavy
people,
pot edibles where I'm like obliterated. Did most people what?
I feel like most people have that to an extent. They're like, oh, I'm high now. I'm like I'm.
That's why I'm
this
feeling
weird,
this way.
Yeah.
That's why I'm got the munchies. That's why. No. Most people just feel. Or I did for a long time. I had to tell myself once on like a really big pot edible where it's like you got obliterated on those things.
Yeah.
It's not like smoking. It's like nonstop smoking for like 2 hours and then like right afterwards. Like how do you feel?
Is it fun even?
Oh yeah, it's fun. But there was a point where I was sitting next to Jamie Kilstein, I think. And a couple other people, like people that were like straighter people than me.
Yeah, Jamie doesn't really.
Yeah, so I felt bad. At least he looks like he does, so whatever. But then that's when I got my theory that once I said something, he goes, wait, what? That's when I realized, like, oh, you're too fucked up. Like, you're just not making any sense. So from that's my general rule. When anybody says, wait, what? That's when you just have to stop talking. But I was like, I'm overdosing on this. This is going to be bad. And then I had to tell myself, like, for the first time, after like 4 or 5 mushroom trips and 10, 15 of those heavy, like, edible trips, I was like, Ari, you know what this is. Like, I had to talk to myself in my brain. So I'm like, no one ever ODs from this. You know it's going to pass because you, in your sober mind, I had to tell, like, you would have heard of someone ODing. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't happen. So it's just the drug fucking with you. So keep your mouth shut, and in a few hours, it'll be gone.
Yeah.
And so I was able to do that. But I didn't start like that. I had to work up to it. I think a lot of people don't know. And they're like, I'm going to go to the hospital. And you're like, no, you're not.
No, you're
calm
not.
Down.
Calm down. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I would always just freak the fuck out. But then basically, so then, like, my sophomore year, so then cut to, like, my sophomore year of college. And then, like, I remember it was just, like, I was walking around in, like, the quad, like, the main area of campus or whatever.
Yeah.
I just had this weird moment where I felt some sort of kind of physical sensation. I remember then, like, I really remember in my head seeing this weird, like, dove imagery, like, for real. And then it felt like a flood of consciousness. It felt like all of these unconscious contents of my brain flooded into my conscious mind. And then I really felt, like, connected, that I tapped into the oneness of life. Like, that's how I would have described it immediately.
Wow.
So it felt like this evolution of consciousness in a way where I kind of felt this connectivity, right? But then
you,
like,
felt the consciousness of life. And that's on what?
This is a couple years after LSD.
Oh, so not while you were on it?
No, sober. Yeah.
Wow.
So it felt like this thing, and then, like,
while you were smoking pot? Or
no,
not even just
no,
randomly, just sober.
Just randomly, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Like, triggered.
Yeah, that's a mushroom trip. That's an LSD trip.
I mean, so I think those doors are open for me because I've experienced those things, and that's how I feel about humanity when I, you know, in that.
I've heard that theory that once those doors are open, not even on, you know.
Yeah, there's
manic,
many. There's many,
like,
ways.
You can't not see the world that way.
Yeah,
anymore.
And there's many ways to get to it. It doesn't even have to be with psychotropic drugs.
Uh-huh.
There are other ways to do it, you know.
Like what?
Like, I'm sure cultivating some sort of, you know, Buddhist meditation,
practice.
Things like that. You know what I mean? But what happened was then, like, all of that energy that was there, it like just manifested itself in me just spinning out of control and becoming manic for, like, a number of months. You know what I mean? For, like, a long time. I was basically, and then, like, it's weird because then after that, instead of acknowledging that I, you know, deal with mental illness intermittently due to potential chemical imbalances in my brain, I looked for every other possible perspective on it, like every Eastern perspective, like other psychologists, like, you know, Jungian psychology, Carl Gustav Jung, who is this disciple of Freud, who's way more prolific than Freud. But he talked about the process of individuation, where unconscious contents flood from your, you know, flood from the back of your mind into your conscious mind.
So
you become more aware that you are, like, you become more human in that respect. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like these different archetypes get activated. These archetypes are these different sort of things in our, you know, in our primordial collective unconscious mind that connects all of humanity, you know, from, you know, an older time in evolution when we just spawned consciousness. And there's different ones. There's like the animus archetype, which has to do with, like, desire and stuff like that. And basically, when these different, there's the life and death archetype and stuff like that. There's the messianic archetype, the savior archetype. So it's the sort of thing, when his theories are, when these things get activated, there's a ton of energy there, and it manifests itself in madness. But, like, people, you can have a certain, if you have a certain belief system or framework of society, you can, like, handle it. But if you only have this monotheistic Judeo-Christian kind of, you know, socialization, it can really fuck with you and make you, like, ego trip, like, you know, at the gates of hell, you know?
Well, now, okay.
And how would it fuck with you to say you're connected to other people?
Well, it made because I didn't have a framework for it because I was feeling all of this connectivity of life. I thought I would. It makes you feel like your ego goes out of control and you feel like you're the center of it. Like
you're
I felt like I was the center of the fucking world. Like I thought I was the Messiah, you know. And then because
oh, see, that's the leap that
oy, it's so fucked. And then it was the sort of thing where it's like, and then you also think that
why would you be the center of it?
Because I was. Perceiving that I was like feeling so much of life and that I had so many answers to create this utopic society that I must be. And I also had this, you know, impending notion that like, you know, doom and demise was about to happen to the world. Like it was either going to be some sort of Armageddon situation or it was going to be like a heaven on earth situation, right?
Yeah.
So it was the sort of thing where it's like the whole weight of the world was on my shoulders, and it was incredibly psychologically straining and terrifying, to say the least, because if you have any semblance of decency as a human being and you think you have like the answers to create this amazingly humanistic utopic society or everything's about to burn down, you're going to like be like you're going to want to do that, and you're going to be agitated when people aren't like on board with you and shit like that.
I'm trying to save
you. Yeah,
get
yeah,
on
yeah.
the bus. Help.
Get on the I'm going to fucking save you bus, you know? But it's weird, man. It's like, you know, now like
it's such a solipsistic way of looking at it too, where it's like I have the answers, the world revolves on me. But
yeah, it's narcissistically absurd.
You're all
there with
the answers, and fine. This, yeah. Remember after 9/11, when people were sending out like 2 years after, people were sending out like emails to saying, "Hey, just so you know, on October 10th, there's going to be a terrorist attack on a mall, so avoid malls on October 10th." And I was like, "Okay, either you believe it," which means you're helping everyone, "or you don't believe it," which means you're bothering everyone.
Yeah.
But if you believe it, why are you stopping with only warning the people in your address book? Those are the people you're going to protect, and only those? You're just like...
You're going to send it via email blast, which has a 1% conversion rate?
60 people. Here, these 60 people I know. Guys, stay at a malls. Everybody else, sorry, but I don't know you that well.
Yeah, it's shitty.
You're
but
all
I mean,
dead.
Dude, but it was just like...
So,
it was
okay,
fucked,
so
man.
You had to, see, I had this trip once. Me and Pete Carboni, the first time I actually really took like heavy mushrooms.
Yeah.
And we both got the same feeling. It was the same strain. These penis envy mushrooms. We both got this feeling of...
Did you say penis envy mushrooms?
Yeah. They're shaped like penises.
Oh.
So that's what they're called. But they're really like introspective.
Yeah.
And the trip is. And we both got this feeling of like, I'm meaningless here. Next to everything is to the world. Like I'm a blink. You know, just here in this generation's alive now. And even, like, over time, it's like, no one will remember me. So I'm, like, meaningless. And so I took that as, like, well, if nothing I do matters, that's kind of freeing.
Yeah.
I can just enjoy myself because that's what it's about. I'll be dead soon. And Pete was just like, nothing matters. And he went into a deep depression for 6 months.
Wow.
Got back together with an ex-girlfriend that he hated.
Wow.
He was like, I need someone to comfort me. Same thoughts, though. Same thoughts, like, I'm meaningless. I don't matter.
It's just the way that, yeah, it's just the way that he took them. Yeah. Wow.
So you had these thoughts of like, I can save the world.
Yeah.
And did you at all think like these aren't real thoughts? It's just a drug.
No, this is what's no, because
you're
not
on drugs
in drug.
2 years.
That's the thing. It's like I think that, you know, that drugs for a lot of people can be this positive experience and stuff like that, and it can be, you know, in a sense, is an aid possibly for some people. I think you have to be, you know, kind of turned on or smart to begin with, because I don't think everybody that takes it or smokes pot, it's like, you know, any sort of agent of evolution of consciousness for them or anything like
it's
that.
Not for everybody.
There's some people that are just idiots or whatever.
Absolutely.
There's some people that's good for. But for me, it's like I am not the poster child for legalization of drugs.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Is there any way to tell that you might have, like, people sometimes are like, I don't want to take acid, I don't want to take mushrooms, I'm afraid it's going to set something off. I've heard about that. And I'm like, I don't know if there's a way to know ahead of time.
I don't know, man. I think some people just get a little fucked over. You know, I think it's a relatively small amount of people.
Yeah.
I mean, I know friends of mine that have tripped dozens upon dozens of times, you know, maybe more, and they're fine, you know?
Yeah.
But it's the sort of thing where it's like, this is the weird thing about bipolar disorder, manic depression, whatever you want to call it. Like, when I'm manic... Like, I don't know that I'm manic, even if people I know love and trust are screaming in my face that I'm manic, because what I believe is that I'm living my life at a higher level of consciousness, and so people just want to label me as mentally ill so they can compartmentalize me and dismiss me instead
people do that with all criticism.
Getting on the train, you know, getting on my trip.
Yeah. People do that with all criticism. But they say this podcast, they're like, I don't know, whatever. But you shouldn't do it outside because it fucks up the sound a little bit.
Yeah.
If somebody says that, I'll just write that off and go, nah, the sound's good enough. It's fine. I enjoy coming across whatever.
Yeah.
But I'm writing, I'm not hearing the criticism.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it's a pretty extreme.
But it might be valid, too. And I'll also write that off.
Yeah, yeah. But this is the more treacherous part.
Yeah, way more. It's not that bad for me.
But listen, this is another level of treachery about it. So I've had multiple manic episodes over the past, probably, I guess, like 13 years, right?
Okay.
This is what's fucked, is that you don't have that self-awareness the next time that it happens.
Oh, you can't go, oh, I don't know what this is.
Yeah, it's really fucked. Where you're immersed in it, like, I mean, that's why it's fucking, you know, that's why it's an illness, I guess, you know? It's because when you're immersed in it, even again, if people are telling you, you just don't perceive that that's what's going on, you know? So that's really fucked, that lack
of... And you can't be like, maybe, I knew this was like that once.
This is the thing to do. I almost have to make like a fucking... like video for myself to be shown to me if I'm manic by my friends or something. You know what I mean?
This is how you're acting.
Being like,
now. You're acting like this again.
No, just being like, yeah, John, like if you're watching this, you're manic. Like, no, you're not making this video so you can show people that you're watching it, so you can trick them into thinking that you're not manic when you are manic. You know, you need to calm down, you know?
Just
not your fault.
This is the last time you were
you know,
manic.
You're not like this. You're not like a bad person.
Are
it's
you?
Just something you deal with, you know? So, whatever, but this is what's very strange, too, is that, like, right now, like, I'm fine. I feel fine about myself. You know, I think I have a firm grasp on reality. You know, I'm being a, you know, productive member of society. You know, I'm being creative. I'm working. I'm doing fine. You know what I mean? Hooked up with a British musician last week. Like, things are okay. You know what I mean? Thank you. But... You know, but it's really weird to have all of these, and I'm glad that I remember all this stuff, to remember all of these things when I was manic. It's really weird to, like,
you don't black out.
No, I'm aware of all this stuff. I talk about it on stage all the time.
How close is this to PMS?
PMS?
Yeah, well, girls know that it's like, I know this happens every month to me. The girls that get it bad and get moody off it. And they're like, I know I'm being moody off it. And if someone tells them, like, you're just being moody, you're not mad about this moment because you're just being moody right now.
Yeah.
And they'll say, like, I get that, but I'm still angry at you. That's not gone.
I would say it's not like that.
At all. Okay. Okay.
But plus, it's very intermittent. It's like every 5 years, you know?
Oh, right. Yeah. How?
But hopefully, it's possible it won't happen again. That's what I'm hoping. You know what I mean? There's a lot of things I can put in place to keep it from happening again.
Drugs?
You know? Yeah, that's part of it.
What do you take?
I take Lamictal.
Lamictal, that's what Brody takes.
Yeah.
And that doesn't fuck with your creativity?
No, it doesn't fuck with my creativity or with me physically either.
No boner problems?
No boner problems. That's more like antidepressants fuck with people like that. You know what I mean?
I get that once in a while.
Yeah. Are you on antidepressants?
Yeah, but we had to like keep working on it because some of them were giving me like complete boner problems. And I'm like, guys, this just makes me want to kill myself more.
Exactly. Some of those can be pretty gnarly. But I mean, the Lamictal doesn't fuck with me at
Brody
all.
Brody said it really messed with his crazy. And everyone reacts differently off it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he was like,
I think part of it you can get in your head about it a little bit and make it be a self, like, you know, self whatever.
He said it made him sleep like 12 hours a day, too.
Really? It doesn't have that effect on me at all.
That's great.
You know what I mean?
I know, Wellbutrin, when I took it, it did one thing to me, but it does opposites to other people.
Yeah.
Yeah, they all do something different. So you're on that, what, every day?
Yeah.
And that's supposed to curb the things?
Yeah, and when I'm like acutely manic, like I'll end up, you know. This is interesting. There's like almost like a system in place for me with like my friends or family. Like if they notice that something is getting... really weird, or they can just tell from you know,
something's out of the ordinary.
Yeah, so if that's the case, they'll pretty quickly like get me to voluntarily commit myself to a psychiatric hospital.
So it doesn't come on all at once; it just starts slowly.
Well, there's a progression, but by the time somebody would like catch it, it would already be relatively intense. But basically, that's what's crazy is that like before you're full blown manic, you experience something called hypomania, which is like the progression upward, and it's a sort of thing where there's very
each time,
okay, yeah.
Go ahead.
There's very advantageous aspects to being hypomanic. It's like you're your alpha version of yourself. You know, you're very charismatic. You're very, you know, you're thinking very interesting thoughts that are, you know, that are making sense, that are innovative. Your intuition shoots up, you know. You're incredibly, you know, like I can pick up all sorts of women that I probably couldn't pick up otherwise, you know.
This is what one therapist told me. He goes, say, what are the good things about your depression?
Yeah.
I was like, what do you mean? He goes, like, just let's not make it 100% bad. Like, what is it? like gained in you.
Yeah, that's a harder one.
I just need to look at the world better so I can write better material.
Yeah, that's something. You know?
Okay, that's one. Cool.
Yeah, yeah.
You're better with chicks.
I've had the best sex of my life when I'm manic. It's like I fuck like Tyler Durden. It's crazy. Like, yeah, it's really weird. It's like, I don't know why. I think maybe there's some sort of shift where instead of me being like neurotic and in my head, I just have like some sort of unbridled confidence or something. That it's so crazy because then I get more physically fit too.
Oh, really?
You know what I mean? Yeah, your like metabolism speeds up and shit. It's almost
that's
like
the hypomania?
Hypomania into mania. But then when you get into mania, then your thoughts start racing too much. It crosses this threshold into this really weird world, and you could have like auditory and visual hallucinations and shit like that and be really paranoid. Like, I thought I was interacting with all of these like, you know, dead people, like, psychologically. Like, I thought I was interacting with Gandhi and,
I mean, you're positive, you know, you were.
Yeah, and, like, Bill Hicks and John Lennon and shit
you're
you know?
Not just talking to, like, random dead people. You're talking to, like,
the heroes
greats.
And shit. Yeah. Yeah. And so it was like that. And then it was also, I thought that everybody knew who I was, but had to keep me on the DL, because if certain people found out about me, they'd assassinate me. And then if that happened, it would be fucking Armageddon. You know what I mean? No, it's not. It's very different from schizophrenia. I mean, I guess, or it's pretty different. I mean,
it like seems similar with, I guess, like, the
there
people
are
watching
overlaps
me and like,
yeah, but not. I don't know. But basically, the schizophrenia thing is like over. I guess like over time can just be like. I don't know. I guess they're
I might
in the
also
same
be
ballpark.
Assuming I saw a schizophrenic who might have been just manic.
Maybe. I mean, this is what it is. It's like between episodes. I have total lucidity, you know what I mean? Like, okay. I don't know if that's the case for schizophrenia. I mean, basically, it's the sort of thing where
they have
I feel like I take bipolar over schizophrenia, you know?
Oh, yeah. Wait, is that what you are?
I have bipolar disorder.
And that's different than the mania, or that?
No, that's manic depression or bipolar disorder are interchangeable terms.
Okay.
But I just, manic depression sounds more artistic and
bipolar is a lot of highs and lows.
Cool. I mean, every manic episode has been followed by severe depression, right. So I've dealt with that too, you know?
When you go off pills, they say, they warn you if you go cold turkey off pills for depression, well, they say sometimes you can feel super happy for like a month, so you're like, oh, I'm fine.
Yeah.
And then it all bottoms out.
I think one of the hardest things to wean yourself off of are antidepressants, you know? I mean, I'm not on antidepressants because that would be like the opposite for me, you know, it could trigger something, but I have fallen into these depressions after the manias. It's like, well, what goes up must come down situation, where it's like I get my mind back and I'm like, oh god, my life is in fucking rubble, relatively speaking.
Afterwards.
Yeah, I believed all this shit. I alienated all my fucking friends. What's going on with me? Hey man, how are you?
Yeah, say hi.
Yeah,
real
go
quick.
For it, real quick. You can say
hello. Hello, how you doing?
It's just for a podcast.
Hello, how you doing, wherever you are?
Cool, man.
What's up? This is the Night News.
Hello, New York.
We have a strange kid over here. He went in that rat poison
thing. Which one? Which one in the rat poison? Which one
and
went in the rat poison?
I like some girls.
No, who?
A little girl.
Oh, what's she doing now? Is she dead?
I don't know. She might be dead in that right now.
All right. Well, thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys. Nice. Have a good one.
Peace, America.
Peace what?
Peace, America.
Okay,
nice
very
one.
Nice. Thanks.
Have a good one. So do you think those guys are ever going to, those kids are going to grow up and smoke weed and do mushrooms? And
probably.
LSD and
the
shit?
One that already got like weird gloves on. Like half gloves with no fingers.
It's interesting, you know, these kids.
Getting ready to lift weights.
Who knows what's
Yeah, when you look
happen,
at their futures, when you like step back, you're like, they're going to be into other things. One of them is going to fuck the other one's girlfriend. And they're going to get in a bitter feud for 10 years over it. One of them is going to fucking,
one might be successful, three
may
not.
One might be a politician.
Yeah, yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah, they're all just like, all they have is potential right now.
I know. Well, no, life will probably kick them all in the
teeth.
Very
little racism they feel at this age, too.
Yeah, that is good. Yeah, for you guys, there's a white, nice white kid, a nice white black kid walking down the street.
LA might be way more racist than New York.
Really?
We separate. We don't mingle.
Well, that happens everybody. There is mingling,
but everyone
here, but
here is on top of each other.
Yeah, but it's pretty separated to an extent.
Here?
I mean,
it's like every building has 20 different races in it.
You're right. You're right. But it's like, it's almost like this melting pot. But, you know, it is like, there is obviously there's a lot of overlap. But there also is like,
there's some place where like you don't come to this neighborhood.
Well, there's that, but there's, I mean, this, there's a cultural divide in this neighborhood. I mean, everybody's getting
like,
along.
Like the Browns over there and the Whites over there.
Everybody's, yeah. I mean, everybody's getting along, and there is overlap, but I mean,
what?
There's not a ton of interaction.
Oh, right.
There's
the University of Maryland, when I was there, they said it was the second or third most diverse college in the country.
Yeah.
But it was just the black side of their table, the Asian side of their table.
That's where my brother went to school.
Maryland?
Yeah.
Terps? Hey, let me have some of that.
It's melting. I've been holding it weird.
Put it down for a second. Let it unmelt.
I should. I've been like, I think because I'm telling like these stories, like, you know what I mean? I'm like gripping the chocolate. But
too much chocolate.
What were we talking about? Is there any more caramel left? Or?
Yeah, there's caramel.
I'll eat it later. I'll eat it later. It's hard to eat
and talk.
Chocolate and talk.
Yeah, talk to my fans. They hate it. I do it all the time.
But we were at something before that kid said he loves America.
Mania, depression.
Oh, yeah, the depression.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, this is what they told me with Brody. They said after he went, he had a manic episode.
Yeah.
And he had to be put in the hospital, whatever it's called, committed for like a month. And when they were getting out, Dave Rath and these other people that like cared for him were like, hey, guys, anything he does now, he's going to feel really embarrassed about later. So while he's in there trying to make phone calls, telling you he needs like your help, or threatening you if you don't help him, he goes, these are the moments that he's going to regret, and these are the things that will send you into depression later, into a deep depression, when you feel bad about what you've done.
Do
you
get
that stuff?
Absolutely, man.
Yeah, so you want to limit those as much as possible.
Yeah, but it's also, I mean, it's hard to, it's like you can forgive other people, you can be forgived by other people, but it's a different thing to forgive yourself, you know?
Yeah.
It's a harder thing to do. I feel like I think it took years, but I think I've done it, you know? Like I
still have not forgiven you. I didn't know you back then.
I know, and you never will. Ari keeps grudges against people who haven't really affected his life in any respect.
Yeah, better safe than sorry.
But yeah, man.
Vendetta.
But I'll tell you, dude. Like, it's been. It's weird. It's like I like to think I've shown a lot of resiliency or whatever over the years. I mean, basically. Things got okay, so I had this episode in Michigan, right? My sophomore year. And then, you know, got through that, went back to school and everything like that. Then I guess like a year and a half later, it happened again. I was in Ireland.
Oh.
Like I was studying at Trinity College in Ireland.
Religious school?
No, not religious school really. But I mean it is like a Catholic school, but Trinity is just it's a really great school in Dublin.
Okay.
And I honestly, like, what has triggered a lot of these episodes has just been smoking weed for me. Because, and this is why I would do it, I was always so, like, pissed off and resentful that I couldn't, like, enjoy this thing that all of my friends were able to just do and was just this great experience for them, you know?
Yeah.
So I think every few years I'd be like, oh, I'm fine now. I can probably do this. And I would just, and I'd fuck up and it would be a fucking disaster, right?
Right.
But it's almost like the chicken and the egg. It's like, am I starting to get manic, and is that why I'm having this slip in judgment and I'm smoking weed? Or am I smoking
maybe
weed?
Maybe you want an excuse, too. Like,
something.
That's what set it in. It's not just happening. Yeah.
I don't know. So, but it's just, you know, I just...
Do you think when people say it's set off by LSD or something, I don't know, my thoughts sometimes work, too, or like, was that going to happen anyway?
Maybe yes, maybe no. We'll never know. So that took a long time for me to forgive myself for that. I'm like, oh. Because people are like, you know, it's mental illness. It's not your fault. Well, it's like, maybe it is my fucking fault.
I'm smoking weed. I know I'm doing something that could send me into this thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, originally.
Every time you smoke pot?
But yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes. I'm never going to smoke pot again. It's just too much
even
of a fault.
Even if it was half the time, then it'd be too much. Or even like 120th
I mean,
of the
it's,
time,
it's,
too much.
It's just, like, it's going to, it would be a disaster.
Have you done it without having negative effects?
This is what it is. It's like, it can be very, it's like, honestly, when I'm on it too, it's like, how I'm going to be is very Russian roulette. Like, sometimes I can be, like, you know, like, fine and fun and engaged and stuff like that. But other times, it's just so intense.
Yeah.
Like, so intense. Like, one of the last times that I smoked weed when I was really manic, I was in New York, and I was, like, really, like, mad at Chase Bank at the time because they were, like, investing in mountaintop removal, right?
Yeah.
Which is true or whatever. So, like, I thought that I had to, like, I thought I had these, like, hacking abilities. So I thought I had to, like, hack through the Chase.com website to, like, rob them of all of their money and transfer it over.
And no thoughts of how I got these hacking abilities, just I have them.
Yeah. And it was bullshit. I was just, like, oh, I click terms and conditions. Now I'm in the subnet. The kernel's exposed, bro. I don't even know what that means. And then I was just like typing in unique URLs like .com/ and then just weird words and shit and then emailing it to myself. So I'm like, oh, now Google knows about it or whatever. And I thought I had to like transfer all of the money to like Bitcoin.com, which is like this decentralized, kind of bank sort of situation that doesn't even use hard currency in any respect. So it makes no sense. But then like I thought like I was going to be assassinated. So I called my entertainment lawyer to like draft papers for me so I could defect to France and shit like that.
You did?
No, he didn't. But he's like, you should come meet me in the fucking city, dude. Like, you need to relax. And then like I got an email from Dimitri Martin, but not like directly from his mailing list. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
But like I thought it would, because he had like a book come out, but he hadn't sent something in like 2 years to his mailing list. So I was like, oh, this is probably Dimitri understands, like, what's going on because, you know, we're this extended underground network of comedian spies or whatever. So he's sending me this link. And there was, like, a link to, like, Amazon on there. So I clicked it, and it was, like, for, like, a Kindle Fire. And yeah. I was like, oh, this is probably – I probably have to get this Kindle Fire because there's a lot of sensitive documents on it that I need to read.
By the way, at that poll?
I don't think so. He's just standing there. Okay. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, you got this Kindle Fire.
So I thought I had all these – this is weird. It's really weird. So I thought I got all these secret files and stuff like that. So I ordered that. But then it said plus like...
Did you ever reach out to Dimitri saying like, I get it?
No, I didn't.
I've gotten messages like that. And I looked later. I'm like, oh, you're going through something. Wow. So I didn't respond. But it's like...
No, I sent some... I'm sure I sent some weird messages to people. What's weird is it was even... But anyway, so then like, just to finish this little insane story. Yeah. So then below it, it also said like, get like one gift or something. So I thought I was like, oh, I'm probably going to get all of these... as well, but it was like, and it was like a Carl Gustav Jung book, that psychologist that I was really into, and I was like, oh, they know what's going on with me, but it was just because I bought a bunch of his books recently, and that's why
the algorithm think, set up, yeah, like, you yeah. also probably want this
exactly.
one.
So it said like there were 20 copies left of this book. I was like, oh, I need to get 20 copies of this special book, and I need them immediately, so I'm going
to
do overnight shipping for everything, because I was going to my friend Nagin's like Persian New Year party, and I was like, everybody at this party is going to be all these interesting socialite people. They're going to need this Carl Gustav Jung book about like atypical association and connected with synchronicity or something like that, right? So I bought all of those things and everything
really?
Like that, yeah. And then I got them all shipped to her place and everything. And then I ended up in the hospital. And then when I got out of the hospital, I called Amazon and they took everything back, including the shipping fee. So,
oh, great.
It's a nice little...
You said I was manic?
I just said I was like, I messed up. I don't know why this happened. I'm so sorry. Can I do this? And she was really nice for some reason.
Did you ever have to give people the real excuse of like, hey, before I was going through a manic episode?
Yes, I did at a bar the other week. Really? In this neighborhood.
Where you ran into somebody?
No, one of the people that worked there. She didn't want to serve me.
Oh, and you're like, okay.
Yeah,
I get
and it was
it.
So embarrassing.
Really like
I was with a friend from work, and we go in there, and I guess one night, I remember one night when I was manic, I was just acting fucking bizarre and intense in there, and they asked me to leave, and like, and I went in there and I explained it. I was like, this was a while ago. You know, I was dealing with this. I was, you know, I suffer from bipolar disorder. I'm very embarrassed about this. Sorry, you know what I mean? And I was like, you know, I'll go if you want. I don't want to cause any problem. And she was like, okay, because you explained that to me, you're okay.
Oh, she
and
took
like,
it.
Yeah.
Oh,
she
wow.
was okay. So, I mean, but then I was just like,
yeah,
I was
otherwise,
like,
you're just a jerk.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
this guy's always an asshole when he drinks.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't know what it is. So, alcohol doesn't do anything to you.
No, I mean, I don't. Yeah, I mean, I drink here and there. I don't drink a ton just for whatever reason, you know? But it doesn't. I mean, I'm sure if I was drinking heavily, it wouldn't help anything. You know what I mean? Like, it's better off
it's
for me to...
not the same thing as...
It's better off for me to be pretty healthy, you know? You know what I mean? Like, from the safe side...
You're not the only one. Not everybody.
Yeah, I know. That was a weird thing to say. It's good for me to be healthy. You know, that's a thing. I don't know. You know what I mean?
As the center of the universe, it's important that I watch myself. You guys
can
die.
It's
fine.
This weird thing where it's like, I don't know, being healthy is good for me.
Yeah.
But, you know, I probably shouldn't be, like, jacked up on caffeine and shit like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, whatever.
Did you ever try to commit suicide?
No, thank goodness. Depressions have never gotten to that point, but I have had ideations of suicide, which means, like, you know, never attempting it or something, but being very comforted by the fact that it was an option.
Oh, yeah, I get that.
You know what I mean?
When I was like, my worst depression, I was like, what I always say is I imagine, because I eventually figured out I didn't have the guts. Like, that was my only thing stopping me. I was
a
coward.
Wow.
But I just had to work up the courage eventually. But I would just, like, take a really sharp, like, butcher knife, and I'd just run it across my wrist just to feel. I'm like, I could press down. And then I would also, like,
I would imagine this was this big truck next to me, and you know how they have those massive gas tanks.
Yeah.
On the side, it's like really
Yeah.
I just closed my eyes at a red light and imagined that just exploding and just eviscerating me.
Holy
and
I'm shit! Like, ah.
Yeah.
So, did you ever attempt suicide?
No. Uh-uh.
Yeah, I never did either.
No, I never did.
But you know, who knows? Maybe one day. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just kidding.
We'll get there, brah. We'll
but
get
I'll
there.
Tell you, it's weird, man.
So,
like,
so you okay? Yeah.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
It was weird. What?
No, I'm just saying. Like, I don't feel like I've totally defined myself by being manic depressive.
Oh yeah,
you
just
know,
a small thing you did. Most of the time, you've not been depressive.
I wouldn't, manic. I wouldn't say small thing, but it's like
of your history. It's not.
This is what it is, honestly, dude. Every time that I've been depressed after being manic, the thing that's gotten me out of it has been doing stand-up comedy again.
Oh really?
It really has been the thing that's given me back a sense of self-worth that has allowed me to kind of talk about what I've been through. You know, not feel alone or isolated in it. You know what
do
I mean?
You talk about it on stage, or you just talk about the things you get
I talk about it on stage a lot.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, at times when I'm more, like, I've talked about it. I've talked about it a lot on podcasts. I do. Yeah, I talk about it on stage and stuff like that. You know, and people, it was weird, man. Like when I came back, basically then. Okay, so 2003 I had another manic episode.
But you're not
in
the manic guy on stage. That's not your thing.
I don't know. Like, you mean my performance style? Or what do you mean? Like,
no, I mean, like, are you the guy that only talks about...
No. But I mean, I talk about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I have bits about it, you know?
You know, have you ever seen somebody with, like, one arm or something, and all their bits are about the one arm? And you're like, dude, talk about politics for one
second.
Yeah,
have, like, an identity, you know? Yeah, it's like, you know, that's why it's like... Yeah, it's like a gay comedian who only talks about his sexuality. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, dude, you're a dynamic person.
Traffic? You don't care about traffic at all?
Like, yeah, it's anything that's like that. No, I don't just talk about it, you know?
That's
But that being said, when I was talking about it on stage and when I was talking about it a lot in podcasts and stuff like that, I got a lot of really positive feedback, a lot of emails from people, a lot of people appreciative that I was talking about it publicly because it's people feel really marginalized. I couldn't imagine.
What's your Twitter address?
It's J-Fod Comedy.
J-5 Comedy?
J-Fod, because John F. O'Donnell, my nickname is J-Fod.
So J-Fod, people, J-F-I-V-E.
J-F-O-D. How do you not know this about me? We don't know each other that well. But John F.
J-Fod
O'Donnell.
J-Fod Comedy.
People call me J-Fod, J-F-O-D. Baron Vaughn made it up 1,000 years ago. But
John F. O'Donnell.
Yeah,
okay.
J-F-O-D Comedy. Yeah, J-Fod Comedy.
J-Fod was taken?
Yes. It fucking was. I'm thinking about changing it.
Baron Vaughn's been giving it out all over the town.
I hate that I have comedy associated with
it. Yeah, I know.
Handle.
It's lame.
Ugh. I feel bad about it. What if I change it to... Them. I can, though. How lost would it get if I changed it?
Well, if you can keep your followers, you'd be okay.
I can keep the followers. I'm thinking about just changing it to @JFodSexy. Is that just too weird?
No. No? I don't want to do that. JFod Comedy's fine.
Ugh, I don't like it, though.
JFodSexy you're going to be more embarrassed about.
All right, fuck
yeah.
It.
Especially if you got like more successful, when people start thinking of you as sexy, then you're like, ugh, this sounds like I'm saying
it's
like, it.
Yeah,
I'm
it's
joking.
Gross. It's gross. Yeah, but whatever.
Do you have when you're manic? Do you get are you like clear at all? Do you have moments of like, well, I'll go here for pizza?
Yeah, you're like functioning. Okay. You're totally functioning
so
in society. That's what's fucking scary about it. You know what I mean? And what happens is like the people that you know and that care about you and you care about,
you know
they,
who they are.
Yeah, and yeah, of course. They start to get freaked out and stuff, but you're meeting all sorts of new people who think you're fucking awesome.
Wild and fun.
You know what I mean? Yeah. They think you're this, like, prolific, interested, passionate, revolutionary person. You know what I mean? And there's a lot of different
just manic depressive
weirdos to interact with in New York, you know, that are totally down for whatever you're doing. Like, I was living on a boat down by the East River and shit like that.
Were you?
You know what I mean?
Are
yeah.
you saying you were?
Yeah, I was living there, yeah. Like, in between, yeah, like, hanging out on this, like, ferry with these weirdos and stuff like that. And, like, you know, I got arrested in Ireland and stuff like that. And then, yeah, that was crazy. It was an interesting story. So I was, like, really manic in Ireland in 2008. And I was, like, convinced that, like, the American government, the CIA, and remnants of, like, the Nazis, like, Nazi descendants wanted to assassinate me. But I was relatively safe in Dublin because... the IRA and Bono are protecting me.
Assassinated, by the way, is the most grandiose way of feeling danger.
Of course. Of course.
Not murdered, not just like killed from my wallet.
Like you think you're assassination worthy. You know what I mean? Yeah.
The presidents get assassinated at kings.
Yeah, exactly.
Some
exactly.
guy.
Exactly.
They're doing a year abroad in Ireland.
Yeah, you can't be like, my dude was in a drive. My friend was in a drive-by. He got assassinated. That motherfucker got murdered.
A straight bullet?
Yeah, yeah. Doesn't Chris Rock have a bit about that or some shit?
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. Yeah, he's jumping over that trash can.
Anyway, so I was freaking out. I was really scared. Yeah. I was paranoid, right? So I was like, kind of like running through Dublin, and I had this like black bag with me, and I was like, okay, Irish people are protecting me. Like, I just can't, like, they know that John F. O'Donnell is in their town. And I was like, the O'Donnells were the last kings and queens to leave Ireland, and, you know, in 1604 during the flight of the Earls. So I was like, clearly I'm a descendant of them. So, like, I'm really.
You can lay your state to the throne.
Yeah.
Like, I know I shouldn't be back here. Maybe you've seen King Ralph, but I'm the guy who should be in charge.
Yeah, so I thought, like, they knew that I'm, like, the real John O'Donnell and shit like that, right? So. So
the people that were in power now didn't want you around. They're like, let's get rid of them.
That's not what I was thinking, but, you know, but
like
but,
Joffrey's fucking enemies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so I'm like, okay, so I'm like running through the neighbor town, like Dublin City Center, and I'm like walking, and I stop, and I have this black bag, and there's like this old Irish guy who's walking in the street, and he has a very similar black bag. So I was like, oh, we're supposed to do the old bag switch, you know what I mean? Where I put my bag down, so he gets my stuff, and then I get whatever sensitive materials are in his bag. So I put the bag down next to him. He just looked at me like I was fucking weird and kept walking, right?
Wow.
So then I'm like walking, and I'm across the street from like one of the fanciest hotels in Dublin. It's called the Marion Hotel. And I'm looking across the street, and there's this guy in like a suit, and I perceive that he's staring at me and like gestures his
positive.
Yeah, gestures his newspaper towards me. I'm like, John, come in here. You're gonna be safe, right? So I go in there, and I kind of get a head nod from the people working at the hotel, like behind the counter. I'm like, they know what's up. Okay. Just play it cool, John. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So then I sit down.
Big espionage, man. Yeah, dude. Be cool about this.
This is fucking high.
Act like you've been here before.
Espionage, dude. Yeah, act like you've been here before.
Rookie, they all look at you like, fucking, anybody be a spy now?
Come on, you've been trained for this.
Yeah. Man, your years of doing nothing other than knowing right now.
You've been doing stand-up for years, bro. You know what you're doing. But so I stand up. So then I go into like this lobby area, and I sit down at this table, and he's there reading his newspaper. So I'm sitting next to him. He's not looking at me. I'm like, all right, he's playing it cool. And then there's these older people that are on the rest of this table, and they're speaking some language that I don't understand. And I'm like, oh, yeah, they're probably like Austrian, German, Nazi descendants or something who hear that I'm around and are scared that they're going to lose all their Nazi gold. I have no fucking idea, right? But so then I sit there for a long time, and then I'm like, I have to let this guy know for sure that I'm the John F. O'Donnell he thinks I am. So I had like a book in my bag. I had Confederacy of Dunces by John Kennedy Toole, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, if I push this book in his direction, he'll know what's up, you know? And I did, and he didn't even see it or do anything. So then I left all my stuff there, and I was like, all right, I should go into the hotel. So I go up to the second floor, and I'm having all these kind of paranoid thoughts, and there's like a couch in like the hallway, and I go and I sit on the couch, and I'm convinced like I'm gonna be like black bagged, like V for Vendetta style.
Wow.
You know what I mean? So I'm like, okay,
shove a bag over your head and throw you in a car.
Yeah. So I'm like, if that happened, so for some reason I took off like my watch and all these weird bracelets I was wearing, like my belt and like my ID and passport, my shoelaces. I don't know why. And I put everything under the cushion, and I was just laying there. And then I was like, okay, if they get me, I'm going to just speak in Spanish and pretend that I'm like a teenage Colombian boy, right? So I was like, hola, yo no hablo español. Me llamo Juan Francisco. Yo soy de Colombia. So I only changed my name to like John Francisco or whatever, which is really, I could have done better.
What you just
that.
Do is completely different.
I know,
you're trying
exactly.
not to be that guy.
Exactly.
But was it because you're like, nah, I'm important enough though. I shouldn't completely.
I don't know,
I
man.
People know.
It's fucking
it
insanity,
out.
Dude. It's swimming through the fucking annals of your weirdo brain, right? So then I'm just there for like a while, and then nobody comes to get me. Nothing happens. So then I get up. And then there's the maid is there, and I'm speaking to her. I'm like, oh, where are you from? I'm speaking to her in Spanish. She's from Brazil. She speaks Portuguese, but it's close enough. And I said something about like, yo soy su cara es hermosa, es the Luzi pod. It was like your face. I was like, Cielo. I was like, I said like heaven, light, peace in your face or something. But she perceived it as like, I locked myself out of my room, you know? So she
hope she can understand it. So yeah, like, I don't know. What's he looking
She's like, oh, room 208, right? So I'm in room 208 now. Now I'm in a fucking room.
Someone else's room?
Yeah, someone else's room. Nobody's in there at the time, right? And there's all sorts of like, books in there for some reason and newspapers from like different countries and shit. And I'm like, oh, I get it. Bono and the IRA set this room up for me so I can lay low. I had a rough night last night. You know, I slept out on the street. It was raining. You know, this morning I was up in St. Stephen's Green begging for money by singing Jeff Buckley's Hallelujah and Bob Marley's Redemption song.
It's a good song.
Very poorly.
Yeah.
Right? So then what happens is I'm in this hotel room. I immediately go into the bathroom and then just start furiously masturbating, you know, because I had like...
How did that help you?
Because I had so much sexual energy and I was like, I'm obsessed with this French woman named Helene who I thought like she was like perceiving me and was like jonesing for me sexually. So we were going to like connect sexually through some sort of like transubstantiated masturbation session or something. I don't know, right? So then I did that and then... There was like pajamas on the end of the bed, so I put on the pajamas and I went to bed for 4 hours, dude.
In someone else's bed?
Yeah. And then I woke up and then I called my mom on like the phone there. But like, because I gave my cell phone away en route to like a Serbian beggar girl because I was convinced that
you gave it away?
Yeah, I was convinced that it was tapped. So like, I dropped it in her like begging coffee cup, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And yeah, because like, wow. Fuck, because like, that was because at the time that was like when like, you know, both John McCain and Barack Obama voted in the Senate to give retroactive immunity to Verizon and the Bush administration.
To Verizon?
To Verizon and the Bush administration. Or maybe AT&T and the Bush administration.
For what? For tapping phones?
It was AT&T. For, like, tapping whole swaths of American cell phones, right? So I was paranoid about that. So then, anyway, so I'm calling my mom, talking to her, and she's like, because my family already knew I was manic before I left for Ireland. They desperately didn't want me to go. They were, like, terrified. And they were like, and she was talking to me. She's like, John, are you taking your medication? And then I went into this whole spiel about how, like, big pharmacy does not have our interests in mind. And
Oh, so she knew her. So she's like, okay, yeah. John, what's going on?
Yeah, yeah.
You weren't
yeah.
taking medication?
At that point, I wasn't.
Did you run out when you were in Ireland or what?
No, I just stopped taking it for a while. I was manic for months before I made it to Ireland.
Okay.
In 2008. It was a really fucked up year. But so then, like, while that's happening and I'm on the phone with her, I start talking about, like, big pharmacy. So, in my mind, I'm talking about very sensitive material. So then the people whose room it is, while I'm on the phone, they open the door. It's, like, a married couple and, like, a teenage girl, right? And I'm perceiving, I'm like, okay, like, this phone call isn't really tapped by, like, scary people. It's tapped by, like, the Irish government because they want to see. They're, like, vetting me to see if I could be, like, an international spy for them. So this is just, like, a thing. So now they're sending these people in to see how I deal with that because I'm talking about this sensitive material on the phone, right?
Now, hold on. Now, all of this makes complete sense to you.
I'm believing this just
like,
as
like you're like, but have you ever tried, did you ever during this try to explain to someone and not be able to explain the details of why you are this?
I don't know. I guess. But anyway,
yeah.
So then they go, excuse me, this is our room. And I go, hold on, mom. And I go, I scream. I go, no, it's not. This is my room. I'm on the phone with my mom. Get the hell out of here. Right? So they leave, you know? And then in my mind, I'm like, all right, I got maybe like 10 minutes before I get kicked out of here. I better take a shower, right?
Yeah, of course.
Of course, right?
Definitely what you want to do,
so
yeah.
I jump in the shower, and then I get out of the shower pretty quickly, and I'm like, all right. So there's a bunch of people are going to come up in here, probably like cops, maybe different like agents and stuff like that. I don't know if like, you know, there's going to be Germans here. I don't know what's going to happen, right? So I better like play the fool. I better play it crazy. You know what I mean? I better like pretend I'm like the fool in King Lear, yeah. So I can like use my comedic license to slither my way out of this thing. So what I do is I put on like a shower robe, like a shower cap, a mascara, and like lipstick on my eyes, right? And my mouth, and then I jump out, and there's all these police there, like the Garda and stuff like that. Hold on 1 second. There's all these like Garda and police and everything like that,
yeah.
And like hospitals. I mean, like you know, hotel security and shit like that. And I just like jump out of the room and I just start like dancing around like show tune style. I'm just like, this is my room.
First of all, that's exactly what you should have done. Now they can say like, oh, this guy's he's going crazy. It's fine.
I'm like, this is my room. I'm singing it. Everybody's just mouth is agape and silent. I thought I was getting kicked out, but then I got arrested and I was in.
Where'd you get the lipstick from them?
Clover Hill Prison for a week.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And boy, you sobered up there? Not sobered up, but sobered up.
No, I was still manic, but then I got out of that. Instead of getting to the hospital, like this musician friend of mine that I met, Liam Code, who didn't, you know, I only met him recently. Like, he didn't know. He thought I was just a creatively interesting you know, comedic guy, you know what I mean? Like, because I was doing shows at the time. But
your shows were okay?
They were, like, very hit or miss. Okay. But, miss. But then I was just, like, let into his care, and I just hung out with him and smoked hash with him for another week, and then went to Belfast, hung out with a bunch of weirdos in Belfast, and then went to Edinburgh and just was spinning out of control, freaking everybody out. And then went back to New York, and my life was all fucked. This was rough.
And then what? Then they got you back on pills? On Lamictal?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah. I mean, but basically, when they get manic, like, when you're acutely manic, they put you on antipsychotics for a little while.
Right away.
To, like, and that kind of, like, can get you out of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then it also is sort of, like, a timing thing where it does kind of run its own course, you know, for after an amount of time.
You come back a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, for me to be, like, in 2008, for me to be manic for 9 months is fucking insane, dude.
It's a
like,
long
some people
time.
Are manic for, like, a week or maybe a month or whatever.
9 months.
Yeah, I could have died.
That's how people could become homeless, right? I mean, do you see those homeless people as manic? I mean, do you see them ever and be like, oh, you're talking to someone who's not really there?
I don't know. You know what I mean? I don't know. I mean, I feel very lucky that I've been able to come back from these things and, like, right now, life is pretty functional. I have a lot of, like, you know, like, I went through all this again. Honestly, I had a really fucking rough year last year. Like,
really?
And even part of this year. It was really fucked.
And you weren't taking a little Lamictal?
I was taking a Lamictal. That's the thing that's fucked
and
up.
And it was still resulting in mania?
Yeah.
Maniac? Are you a maniac? Is that what they call them?
No, they don't. But okay. That would be great. Yeah. But that must be, like, the origin of it.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a clinical maniac.
Yeah. He's a maniac.
You know what
depression
I mean?
And he has clinical depression and mania? No. Just depression right now.
That was really weird.
What do y'all talk about?
I could have been like, well, no, he has depression.
I'm better. My pills help me.
I have mania.
So wait, it still happens when you are on.
Well, I think it can if, like, but it's really going to be triggered if I'm, like, using, like, weed, marijuana, and stuff like
that. Yeah, sure.
You know? But it's the sort of thing where it's like, that's still a thing. It's like, now, by the way that it's, like, cyclically worked, I think, like, worst case scenario, it happens again in, like, 5 years.
Let's say it does.
But best case scenario, it doesn't happen again, and that's what I hope. Like, I don't live every
day.
What
are the odds that it doesn't or does?
It's somewhat up... They don't really know. They don't know. And it's somewhat up to me, depending on if, like, I stay, you know, healthy and stuff like that, and, like, make sure I'm, like, eating and sleeping consistently and stuff
that.
There's all sorts of shit, right?
Oh, they say that with depression, too. It's like, if you drink, you're going to make yourself more depressed. If you don't go out, you'll make yourself more depressed. I know it's hard to leave the house and actually go on a walk in the sun.
But yeah, yeah.
If you don't do that, that will make you more depressed.
Absolutely. And if, like, if I'm not sleeping for a couple of days or something, like, you miss, like, your sleep pattern. But the thing that's crazy, it's like, you know, obviously stress is part of it. But what's so crazy, it's like, I'm a fucking stand-up comedian. You know what I mean?
No stress, really.
Yeah, but yes and no. I mean, the only stress you have is what you kind of put on yourself.
Yeah, it's like, I didn't get this thing, I didn't get that thing.
Whatever,
but really, you can wake up at noon if you want.
Yeah, yeah. No, but that being said, there is stress to doing stand-up. But also, you know, I'm a real estate agent, too. There's stress there. It's like a crazy frenetic life. But, whatever. But, the thing is, it's like, now, like, the things that happened, so 2008 was really rough, and then following that, I was, like, depressed for another 9 months, right?
Yeah.
So, I basically was, like, I already been establishing myself in New York for a number of years, you know? So, it was like, oh, fuck, like, what's going on with John
here?
Yeah,
did you lose a lot of spots,
you know,
or stuff? Or people not want to book you?
Well, it was like, yeah, I was, like, alienating myself from everybody. Like, you know, like, me and my buddy Timmy from the Whitest Kids, we started the first show at the Creek in the Cave back in 2007. You know what I mean?
Really?
But yeah. But then, like, I got
who's
kicked
that?
Out
Tim
of there.
Who?
Timmy Williams, you know, the Whitest
He's
Kids.
In the Whitest
that,
Kids, you know.
Yeah, that sketch group.
Yeah, Trevor Moore.
Yeah, Trevor.
He's doing my story, my next those next taping of the story.
Oh, that's great. He's great. I love Trevor.
He's got a cool thing from Tijuana. Something that was like
good.
Enough. Tell
enough.
That one.
You're in. Yeah.
Yeah. It's
good.
All travel stories.
No,
like,
he's
perfect.
Awesome. Oh, that's good. But no, I love Trevor. But
so you started with that guy Timmy.
Yeah, I mean, I knew them from way back. I used to do that. I used to open for them at their piano show all the time and shit like that, you know. But so, but you know, I got kicked out of there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, alienated myself from all my friends. It was a fucking disaster, right? But then basically, like, I was like burning bridges in 2008, starting in like April till like, you know, like around Thanksgiving when I ended up in the hospital. I was in this terrible state hospital in Elmhurst, Queens for like 2.5 months. It was a fucking disaster. And then I was just depressed the whole time I was in there because I like got my mind back. But then I was just miserable. I like moved back to Jersey. I like moved in with my mom, like, and just was like a miserable piece of shit. And then I was like miserable for like 9 months. And then I came back to the scene in like the late summer, fall of 2009. And, you know, started feeling better when I was doing stand-up again and just like worked my ass off to rebuild everything and stuff like that, you know? And, you know, accomplish some cool things and still doing stuff. But then, like, 2012,
did you have to explain to a lot of people? Like, I'm sorry if I acted weird, but...
Yeah, it was all sorts of shit like that. It was really hard, man. It was, like, it wasn't the easiest thing to do.
But I mean, I wouldn't...
It's like, you know, you're like...
into it, like, well, this is what he's going through. I would just be like, he's an annoying guy.
You know, that's what... You probably would have because you had no context to know me or something like that. But this is what it is, man. Like, luckily, over the years, you know, I'd given out a lot of goodwill in the scene. You know, I've been very... kind and generous to people and stuff like that. I've like always been helpful. Like that show at the Creek, like we were very helpful to a lot of comedians that were first coming to
which
the city.
Which show at the Creek? With
the one with Timmy. It's called The Kingdom of Heaven. Like,
Creek's,
you know,
for 5 years.
Well, the place is actually, bar's been open, I think, for like 10, but they've been doing comedy.
Took it over, right?
Yeah, yeah. He's doing comedy since like 2007. But basically, you know, I do that 51st joke show. You know, I've helped a ton of people out with that for all these years and stuff like that. I've always just been pretty warm to people. You don't know about that show?
Mm-mm.
Oh, we've done it for like...
51st jokes?
Yeah, we've done it for 7 years in New York, 3 years in L.A., and 1 year in Austin.
Is it a theme or is it just a stand-up
show? Yeah, it's like the first week of the year. It's like 50 comics are all booked on one show telling the first new joke they've written for the new year.
Oh.
Yeah, it was like... Last year was good. It was like sold out at the Bell House and then...
Did you ever get somebody writing like a whole bit?
It's like you get 2 minutes tops.
Oh, okay.
You know? And it's been fun. It's been, it was like sold out at the Bell House, sold out at the Downtown Independent.
Bell House is fun. Know? I haven't been Downtown Independent. Bell House is cool.
Yeah. But yeah, and then now it's like my friend does it in Austin, and it's gonna happen in New Orleans, Austin, New York, and LA this year or whatever.
A bunch of places?
Yeah, all under like the same umbrella of it.
Within the first week or two of the year?
Within the first week, yeah. You know? So yeah. I do the New York one, and then I fly onto the LA.
Were you ever violent to anyone else?
No, I've never had like, never been violent really, which is good. But
your friends worried about violence? Did you ever get in somebody's face without?
Yeah,
being
sometimes
violent?
I've gotten like verbally aggressive. You know what I mean? Agitated, but never. Yeah. I mean, I don't think ever to like a really scary degree. I don't know. But basically though, it was like, you know. So then I was like working really hard to claw my way back from like 2009 on. And then I was, like, headlining this place out in Denver over the summer, like the Oriental Theater.
Yeah.
And then shit started getting, like, haywire then, you know?
When was this?
This was in, like, July of 2012.
Okay.
And then it was, like, just, like, the following
while you were on the McDowell still?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was just, like, this was just a number of, like, then, like, there was, like, spurts of mania for the past few, like, the past, like, the months following that. It was, like, it was a really fucked up time. So it
spurts.
Was, like...
How long were the spurts?
Maybe, like a couple weeks or like a month, and I'd be okay for a couple months. But it was just basically, and they weren't as severe. It was like, I feel like I've cultivated more of a threshold to deal with insane thoughts and just like roll with it, you know, without making it seem like such a big deal or whatever, which is really weird thing to say.
Experience?
I think so, yeah.
Well, it's like that with girls too. You break up with somebody, the first time you break up with somebody, like, my life is over.
Yeah.
And then the 20th time, you're like, whatever, it hurts a little while, it'll be fine in a week.
Like, I was just believing weird things, but being like, oh, this is just the way things are. You know, like,
so you can tell yourself, I'm having weird thoughts, don't believe them?
No, not don't believe them. I'll be like, this is real, but just the way it is, no reason to get freaked out about it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, that sort of thing.
Okay.
But anyway, like, I'll just be honest with you, man. Like, July.
Yeah.
It's July of 2012.
Okay.
July of 2012. Doing shows in Denver. I'm friends with all those Denver comics. They're great guys, you know?
Berger and John Roy.
Yeah, yeah. No,
Ben,
like,
Roy.
Yeah, Ben Roy, Adam Kane Holland, Andrew Overton, all those guys. And, like, yeah. But then I, you know, so I ended up in the hospital in Denver for a couple of days over 4th of July. Got out of that pretty quickly. Then did, like, a really big show in New York, like, a few days.
When you say the hospital... You mean
psychiatric hospital?
Psychiatric work.
Well, I was actually, I got arrested. I was in jail in Denver for a night, and then they transferred me to the hospital. I was in the hospital for like, 4 days or maybe a little more.
And doctors watch you and observe you and decide what they think you're.
Well, they know. I mean, they'll get my history. You know, history from other doctors and
that's
shit.
Helpful.
You know, so but it was the sort of thing where it was like I recovered from it pretty quickly. Went and did like a really big show in New York the following week, you know, at the Ace Hotel with Janine Garofalo, and it went really well, you know, like, then I was back on track, and then I was like working, you know, I was like killing it at this real estate job, like doing like a ton of deals and stuff like that,
yeah,
and like shows are going really well, and like auditioning for commercials or whatever, right, and then I was fine like for like into the fall, but then shit got gnarly again in December. Ended up in the fucking hospital in December over Christmas. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then, like, got out of the hospital in time to, like, pull off and produce and, produce 50 First Jokes in both New York and L.A. sold out. And go and do both of those shows. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And do really big shows in L.A. and do well on them. Like, you know what I mean?
You got 50 people to do them?
Yeah, dude. Comedians, like... My friend Sachi Ezra books it in New York, and
yeah.
Jeremy Burke books it in L.A. I don't know if you know Jeremy; he's a good guy.
No, I know
Brian Burke.
He
produces a lot of stuff, but he's a Loud Village guy. No, dude, there's like, it's hard because I wouldn't want to book it because there's way more than 50 funny comedians in either both of those scenes. So it's like, it's hard to get on it. You know what I mean? Like, I want nothing to do with booking it. But
booking's hard for that reason. Like, have me on.
And then people are like, oh, you don't think I'm one of the 50 funniest comedians? Like, people can get really upset
by
it.
Yeah, but then you want to be like, show me the list. Show me who you're funnier than. I think you'd be surprised that there are 50 people that are clearly funnier than you.
It's fucked. Yeah, but it's true, man.
Yeah.
But then I was, I pulled all that off in January. And then, like had a fucking huge real estate month in January, which is really tough because it's the winter. You know, but then February, I ended up in the fucking hospital and then got out. March was in the hospital, but then I got out. And then it was just like, then I was like depressed for like April, May into June. But then I just started fucking grinding away and everything's good. Like, you know, I have this job back. I've done almost 20 real estate deals in the past 2 months. I've been doing a lot of shows. I'm back going on these like
so you
big
feel
commercials.
Fine when you're normal.
You know what I mean? And there's just like a system in place where if like I'm acting weird now, my family or friends catch it early. They bring me they get me to voluntarily commit myself to the hospital, which I'm okay with doing because I realize even if when I'm manic, I realize that if I don't voluntarily do it, I'll be involuntarily committed, and then I'd potentially have to be there for a lot longer.
Oh.
Right? So I'll do that.
Oh, yeah.
I get my mind back relatively quickly. I don't, like, I'm not immersed enough in society to fuck up my life too bad. And then I can, you know, go back and keep pursuing my comedy career and real estate career.
When you see mania portrayed in popular media, what are the things they don't get right? What are the things they seem to nail?
I guess they don't explain how it's really not just, like, arbitrary insanity. Like, it is connected with what's going on around you socially and geopolitically and stuff like that.
Burger King's.
Yeah, it's not just like, pots and pans. You know what I mean? There's that. And it also, it doesn't highlight it's not clear cut, but there are some positive things, some advantageous things. You know, you can be prolifically creative during these times as well. You can think these really interesting, innovative, humanistic thoughts, stuff like that. But, it's just a really, really weird thing.
Once you're sane, more sane anyway, you can then
draw from them a bit, you know? So there's stuff like that. There's also I don't know. It's almost like if you think about like Nietzsche said in as one of his quotes, he goes like, as evolving beings, our newest attribute is consciousness, and it's still imperfect because it's new, thus it can still hurt us, you know?
Oh, right.
And so it's the sort of thing where it's like, what if there's all of these, you know, like our next step in evolution is more, evolution of awareness or consciousness, however you want to define that, you know? But let's say that's happening to all people on this plane of existence in different ways. But if it is like an evolutionary, you know, mutation, so to speak, you know, mutation and evolution, it's not like smooth sailing. It's jarring and it's jagged and it's chaotic and it's raw. So who knows? Maybe I'm going through something, you know, and I'm some sort of you know, beta aspect of it that's a fucked up, kind of tweaked out version or something.
That's what you feel?
No, but, like, I mean, it's a theory. You know what I mean? It's a thought about it, you know? But when I'm, you know, when I'm manic, I think I give myself a much more glorified vision of my life than when I'm like this. Yeah. But, dude, it's like, for whatever reason.
So you don't have to, like, notice about normal things. Like, are you like, I don't have to clean my room?
When I'm manic?
Yeah. Are you like, I'm bigger than that? Like, do you not, you know what I mean? Are you
I feel like it's not like I think about it like that from an arrogance perspective. It's more of like I'm too busy, or like my thoughts are racing too much to get shit like that done. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like it's weird. And like actually, what's interesting is when I was really fucked up, like over like the winter. So like a friend came over, and like I guess he was just like letting me do what I do or whatever. He's kind of an interesting guy, but he wasn't like, it wasn't like a friend of mine that was going to be like, dude, you're fucked up. He was just like letting me go. So like I recorded like an hour and a half of me just like saying shit that I haven't gone back and watched. So it's just like,
you're, like,
it's
going to
be like,
watch it,
it's going to be like fucking cringe fest 3000. But I mean, but dude, like right now I feel better than I've ever felt. Like even when I came back in 2009, I had so much to like prove, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you, and there was so much self hate.
In 2012, that wasn't set off by weed.
Let's see. No, it wasn't. But then, like, the December one was, because I was in like a fucked up frame of mind. I think I was so pissed that it happened again that so I was like, fuck it.
Yeah.
And then like December was fucked, and then like, yeah, and then somehow I had like a really competent, prolific January. And then February was weed, and March. And then February, when I got out of the hospital, I still wasn't okay. You know what I mean? And then I ended up back in the hospital. And even when I got out of the hospital in April, I kind of was starting to get some clarity. But then when I got it back, then I became depressed. You know what I mean? I was still, when I got out of the hospital, a little bit too early.
Describe the process of going into the hospital. Like when you say, hey, I'm here to commit myself, do you have to do paperwork ahead of time?
Well, you're there. You go to the emergency room initially. You go to the emergency room, and you're with, I was like with friends, you know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like, that making me
go. You just go to the counter?
Yeah. I mean, you go to the, and then they're like, they take you in, and then they like, you know, they do like, you know, initial blood pressure and stuff like that. You wait there. You see like a doctor. You just sit. I mean, I was like,
suitcase?
When we get, my friends like packed a bag for me with shit and stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, it's fucked up, dude. Like Ari, man, like, I've been in a fucking psychiatric hospital like a handful of times. Like,
do they know you?
No, they don't know. It's in different ones. But I mean, like, am I supposed to feel bad about myself? Am I like this broken person or something? You know
what
I mean?
Well, here's what I wanted to talk about also, because this happens with almost everything. Do you feel weak that you have to take these pills to keep yourself quote unquote normal?
I'd like to think that I don't. I don't.
Okay.
I don't.
I know a lot of people with depression that feel like that. They feel like, well, I can't deal with myself.
I think at times I have
to take this. I wish I wouldn't be like this. Yeah. I should be normal. But then it's like you go through menopause. You take fucking.
There is no normal. There's just fucking life, dude.
Estrogen.
You know?
Right.
It's just fucking life. You know. But I honestly, I think at times I have.
Yeah, but there's manic episodes, which are
not normal. Yes.
Yeah.
But like, dude, if over 50% of people are taking some sort of, you know, antidepressant or some sort of drug to like feel normal because their brain chemistry is different. If it's over 50%, what is this like status quo brain chemistry?
They need a better word than normal. They need not having an episode or having an episode. Not having
Sure. But honestly, like right now, for whatever reason, I think at times I think I have been self-loathing and felt bad about myself, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know why. Like, I've let go of so much entitlement issues. And then it's the sort of thing where it's like when you come back from something like that and you're like a creative person trying to pursue something, there is this danger of having this sense of entitlement. You're like, well, the comedy I'm doing is coming from this deep place and I've overcome this pain, you know what I mean? And this person's just talking about this like fluffy observational shit, you know what I mean? Like, I'm telling like the truth and this is like, you know, courageous and heroic. But fuck that, you know, fuck that egoism bullshit, you know? And for whatever reason, like, I feel like I'm just putting less pressure on myself.
Do you find it easier? I have after depression, but do you find it easier to, like, when small obstacles come in your way of going, like, whatever?
Yeah.
Fine,
yeah.
I missed the train. It's not the worst thing in the world. Fine, I didn't get this part, whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't, I don't care.
Instead of going like, damn it, what's wrong with me?
Yeah, I mean, I do, there's still certain things that I'm like, oh, that would have been nice to be able to do that, you know?
Yeah, not would have been nice is different than like,
yeah,
you know, punishing yourself mentally over it.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to do that.
Okay.
And I know this sounds good. Weird too, but like being so broke throughout my 20s or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fucking miserable, dude.
I know.
You know?
Trust me.
Like, it's hard. You really lose a sense of self-worth when you can't fucking make any
pay
money.
Anything. Ugh. You can't pay for anything.
It's embarrassing. And I think especially in this culture, it's like, it's almost seen as like a character defect if you can't make money.
Oh, yeah. Especially in New York where people like, are not just comedians and actors, but in LA, people are like, oh, yeah, you're getting ready to do your thing, so it's okay for you to be broke. But here, people are like, you come a comic, people are like, I'm an accountant. Yeah, I make 75 grand a year.
Yeah.
I make 100. I do my job. I'm trying to get ahead. What do you mean you have no money?
Yeah.
You should have money.
Yeah, there's people. There's a huge disparity of wealth people walking down the street together.
Yeah, and LA people get it. We're like, sorry, I can't go to the movie. I'm broke. They're like, cool, yeah. I'll pay. They just get it there.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, man, like, that honestly has made me feel good. Even though I'm not making much money from comedy, I have a good source of income that doesn't fuck with my ability to do comedy.
Yeah.
You know, so fuck it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, whatever.
So how do you feel like, we're like, I wish I didn't have to do this? Like,
I don't know, man. I mean, I'm like, you know, it's weird. It's so weird. It's like, you know, I have all these albums for digital download, and like people download them from all over the country and shit like that. You know what I mean?
Your album?
Yeah. If you go to livefromouterspace.com, you can
livefromouterspace.com.
That's my website. Yeah.
Okay.
You can download like 7 or 8 EPs. They're like 15 to 20 minute sets.
EPs. Okay.
Yeah. And then,
how much are they?
It's pay what you want.
Nice. How do you do that? How do they pay what you want? How do you set that up?
It's just set up, you know?
So you say, fill in here 0 to 1,000?
Yeah.
And whatever amount
and,
you want.
Yeah, and then just do like PayPal.
PayPal?
Yeah.
Huh. I'll try that.
No, it helps. I mean, it's like people, I've gotten
And then if they don't want it, you're like, if you don't have money, fucking listen to it.
No, that's how I feel about it. Yeah. I mean, it's been cool. I mean, you know, like it's paid for some plane tickets and shit, you know?
Yeah.
But, so it's weird. So I have that, you know, like I've become a popular guest in some podcasts. People like, you know, dig my comedy or whatever. So I have like, you know, nothing sustainable, but somewhat of a following. But it still is not translated into, for me, it just hasn't translated into like economic comfortability or whatever. But
oh, yeah,
you know?
I don't think it'll ever translate 1-to-1 into it. It'll just like help, like a podcast like this, yeah. Whatever else you do.
But well, for
just,
some
those
people,
things just help a little on your way.
I mean, some people break through in a big way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, some people. Where all of a sudden no one knew them, and all of a sudden it's like, yeah, this is what I've heard. The quote I love is, success has many mothers, but failure's a bastard.
Ha!
Because you can always, like, if it wasn't for that guy, I'd be. But success is like, well, this guy gave me a start in this club, and that guy, well, he told me to go into comedy, and everyone's saying, like, I'm the reason you're successful.
Yeah, you're right. But, you know, it's all good, man.
Yeah.
But then it's weird. Then you say things like, it's just a privilege to get to do stand-up. And you say something like that, or you're like, fuck you. You're like, you know what I mean?
It's an honor to be in this club. Like, it's a wall. It's four walls and a mic. It's not an honor. It's a good club you have set up. Relax.
Exactly. No, but I mean, but that being said, dude, like, whatever, you know? Like,
does it, yeah?
I don't know. I don't feel bad about myself.
No, you shouldn't in any way.
You know?
Well, the way I see it is just a sprained ankle. It's like, yeah, put a cast on there.
Yeah.
Put a brace on there. It's okay. You sprained your brain.
Sure. It is weird when it's your brain, though.
Yeah, I know, because you can't see a sprain. People don't believe you.
Yeah.
Because you're like, well, it's not swelled up.
Yeah.
I don't see anything.
And I just don't want to be like a liability in my friends' minds. You know what I mean?
Oh, right.
And I think they know when I'm well. I don't think I am, but like, you know. What can you do, you know?
Yeah, well, I heard about you from Rebecca and somebody was talking. Maybe Justy, maybe somebody else.
Oh, yeah, Justy mentioned to me. She was like, oh, you should talk to Ari.
Well, I was something at the creek. Justy might have just been there. I might not have been talking to her. But, like, they were like, oh, John F. O'Donnell. I'm like, what? It's like, you know, this episode. I'm like, whoa, what happened? What is it? What do you mean?
Were they were saying it like that?
No,
like,
they weren't saying it. They were like.
Were they like, oh,
no,
was, that
no,
guy.
No, it wasn't like that. It was more like this, like, oh, John, like, hopefully you won't have another one, but he keeps, you know. It wasn't like they were upset about it. They were like sad for you over it.
Yeah, I mean, people
That's
care about me, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
It'd almost be like if you kept investing in like loser investments and losing all your money and be like, oh, John, another time.
That sounds so fucking awful.
Yeah, but it wasn't like they were upset how it affected their life over it at all.
Yeah, but dude, don't equate me to a loser investment. That's fucking...
Oh, that's me. That's not them. That's the way they were, yeah.
But, no, I'm a winning investment, bro.
You'll see. Do you have people that won't work with you anymore that you haven't been able to sort of, you feel it's from
no,
that
No, actually. No. I don't think so.
Mac Lindsay told me the story of how Stanhope, he was like, he really looked up to Stanhope, and he was way too gacked out on some either alcohol or coke or something. And he goes, yeah, I could tell. He looked at me weird, and from then on, he just won't. And he goes, I know what the moment was. I get it.
Wow.
I get it. I was being an asshole on this stuff, and it sucks, but
yeah.
He'll never look at me as, like, not a liability around him.
Yeah,
you
I don't
have
know.
People like that you can tell. It's like, I know why you're fine. I'll never be able to make it okay, but fine. But
not in the comedy community, no.
That's good.
No.
That's really good.
No, I don't.
There's enough weirdos in the comedy community.
Yeah.
My thought was to take mushrooms and walk around New York City on like a full, like a packed like summer day. People are like, oh, people are going to treat you weird. I'm like, there's too many crazies that people ignore. They'll just ignore me.
Yeah, they will.
If I'm staring at a door, a front door from 5 feet away, they'll just walk in the door around me. They won't.
Yeah, nobody's going to pay attention to you at all.
Yeah, so it's perfect. You're anonymous.
Yeah, I just, my brain would melt. I have the brain chemistry of a newborn baby.
Yeah, you
it's
shouldn't.
Just the way it is.
Doesn't sound like should.
But you know, man.
Did doctors ever think it was something else besides manic?
No.
Never?
No.
They just
but that's
was...
the thing, dude. It's like you read certain things, and like in certain Eastern cultures, the same people that are experiencing the same thing,
yeah,
they're like respected as these like people that are
shamans
and shit like that are experiencing this heightened consciousness, you know? So obviously it's way better to perceive yourself like that than it is to somebody who's mentally ill due to chemical imbalances in their brain.
Yeah.
But that being said, it's like, what am I going to do? Go move to fucking Nepal and sit on the top of a mountain? You know, I'm trying to function here, within this social compact in America or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
I just don't give a fuck anymore, dude. This is where, honestly, I want to just have, you know, hopefully come up with a lot of content, hit up cool cities and perform.
Does it stop your creative flow?
No. When I'm depressed, it does.
It does. Like, you can't sit down and
when
write.
When I'm manic, too, like, initially there can be some stuff, but then your thoughts are racing so much that it's a fucking disaster. And the performance, like, I was having pretty erratic performances. Like, I was, like singing Bob Marley in an Irish accent on stage. Like,
I think,
absurd
like, this
shit.
Is brilliant.
Thinking you're doing
like
brilliant shit.
Or like
yeah,
whatever.
All sorts of weird shit. And sometimes, like, the things would be aligned and it would be, like,
people
really interesting
it.
Or whatever. Yeah. But other times it was like, oh, fuck. But it was never consistent. And yeah. All sorts of weird shit happens. Like, for some reason, Rastafarian culture has always taken on a huge meaning for me and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Really?
Like, I identify
what
as being, like...
What was that song,
like,
Bob Marley?
Like, Redemption song.
Redemption song, yeah.
I would identify as being, like, you know, Jah Rastafari, like the second incarnation of Jah.
Really?
Yeah.
Of God?
Yeah.
Of their
God. Yeah.
That's why they always say I and I. That's my favorite part of that.
Exactly.
It's like, I am also the fucking God.
Could you imagine how disappointed they'd be if I was their God?
Yeah.
Like, let down. Little white guy, let down.
Like, do we worship him or become like heretics? What do we do here? What's our options? Because that guy does not look like what we'd want.
But I'm in a good place now, man. Fuck it.
His hair is wispy instead of all natted up.
Looks like a loser investment to me.
No, not that you'd be a loser investment, that you invest in loser stuff and go broke all the time.
Oh, that okay. That's
what I mean.
I thought you were saying I'm like a loser
investment.
No, it's
like, oh, John lost all his money again.
No. Like, yeah, you know what I mean? Okay. Like, yeah.
Like, they didn't want you to go through this, but it's too bad. But you do go through it.
Yeah. But I'm good now, you know?
That's great.
So it's the sort of thing where it's like, all right, now, worst case scenario, I'm good for a few years.
Yeah.
Let's fucking
enjoy this few years.
Yeah. But let's have some good things happen in my fucking career and shit like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
what are you, now how are you going to, when it, I mean, let's just say it, plan for it happening again. What are you going to do?
Well, what I'm going to do is, like, have enough things in place that when it happens, it all gets nipped in the bud early enough that it doesn't fuck things up. Like, things did not get fucked. Things got royally fucked in 2008 into 2009. Things did not get fucked
in 2012.
In 2012 so bad. You know what I mean?
If you ever booked a show, would you tell them ahead of time or maybe even after you signed your contract? Like, by the way, you guys, I have this thing that hopefully it won't be a problem at all, but it may be.
Oh, like if I book like a series or something?
And I want you to be aware of it ahead of time.
I guess so. I mean, fuck. I mean, it's the fucking the fucking industry is so fickle and nobody gives a fuck.
Yeah.
Like, that might
be
like.
I would say do it after
that would be like a deal breaker.
Yeah,
you know
I would
what
say
mean?
Don't do it when you're signing a contract. Do it like, okay, I booked it. We've already shot two episodes. Now let me tell these guys.
Yeah, but I will tell you what, man. Like, my commercial agent.
Who do you have? I need to get one out here.
CESD. They're terrific.
Oh, okay.
But, like, basically, I was working with them and then. Like, I went on an audition at this one place, and I guess I was acting really weird or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Which when I was like, when I found out about that, I was like, oh, fuck. I was like horrified, right? But, yeah. So, like, I avoided that. So then, like, I kind of, like, was working my way up.
But that'll help you get commercials. I mean, if you're a little weird, it's like, well, I don't know what he's saying, but this had nothing to do with Pringles, but come on. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you fucking, you think so. It's the opposite, dude. Oh. The commercials are listening for commercials is rough.
Eh, it's fun. It's stupid.
It is stupid. It's stupid.
That's how I made my living for a lot of years.
Well, you have, I guess you're good at it. I feel like I'm too like expressive or too intense or whatever. Oh. But I don't know. That's good.
Not care.
Yeah. I mean, I don't care, but I haven't booked anything. I've gotten callbacks, but I haven't booked anything. Okay. But I mean, I've only been doing it, I don't know, whatever. But I guess I booked one thing. Some like, but it was.
This is the advice Bobby Lee gave me, because Bobby Lee used to be great at it.
Yeah.
He used to be great at it. Booked like 7, 8, 10 commercials a year. Now, he's Asian, sure. But there's plenty of Asian people.
Yeah, he's a talented actor, for sure, of course. Bobby Lee's great.
He said this. He goes, just be the guy they want to have at their Christmas party. Like, it's like, you read it, sure, obviously, you know, do the stuff. Don't leave out the part about Dreyer's ice cream if it's for Dreyer's ice cream.
Yeah, but yeah.
If you want to change a line or something, sure. Or fucking, just be cool. Like, at callbacks, just say, like, make them laugh before you even start the read.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Book it off that.
No, I do that. I do that. Oh, okay. I do that. But I got very close to booking something with Amy Sedaris, and then, you know, but that didn't happen. But whatever. But anyway, I used to go in for a callback for a New York Lottery thing 2 days ago, and fucking Eric Wareheim was in there. So I guess he's directing it.
Wow, cool.
Yeah, he directs it sometimes. So I was like, that would be nice. I don't know if I'm getting it, but that would be cool. But it was so weird to walk in there and not expect to see him there. And then you're just like, oh, hey.
I saw, who directed Spies Like Us?
I don't know.
John Landis.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I didn't know he was in a commercial audition. He was casting, and I didn't know, just some guy with a beard.
Sometimes they do that.
You gotta go?
No, I don't.
And, but, and he goes, I was like, oh, he's like, looked at my resume. He's like, oh, you're a comic? He's like, yeah, you should come by the Comedy Store sometime. It's usually fun night. He goes, oh, I get mobbed. I couldn't go in there. And I remember thinking, I didn't know it was him until way later. I remember thinking, like, get over yourself. You're a commercial director.
That's hilarious.
Nobody knows who the fuck you are.
That's fucking hilarious. And then you're like, oh.
Yeah, I found out later. I was like, who was that guy? And I started looking, and then I found out who it was. And I was like, oh.
That's really funny, dude. But anyway, so then, I kind of, you know, like, I dipped out, like, so then I wasn't, you know, like, in March, like, April. Then, like, April when I got depressed, I was kind of hiding away from things, you know what I mean? So, like, May, June. But then, like, my buddy Josh, you know, an entertainment lawyer who's, like, you know, knows more and, like, knows my commercial agent, works together, right? So, like, then, like, he messaged me. He's like, dude, he's like, you know, they're, like, more as, like, you know, not mad at you. Like, I was talking to her about what was going on. She was just, like, you know, worried. Like, they still want to work with you and stuff like that.
Oh, that's good.
And then I was, like, cool. And then I was sort of, like, gearing up to get back in touch with her. But I was kind of, like, waiting on, because I was really embarrassed about some of the things that happened. Mm-hmm. But then she just emailed me asking if I wanted to, you know, start going on auditions again and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, I do. And I'm like, I'm very appreciative of you and Josh. Like, thank you. I was like, I'll be honest with you.
Oh, that's
I went
cool.
through like a rough thing, but like, you know, I'm back on track now. Things are good, you know? And then she's like, okay. And then so I went in and like the contract had just happened to expire, but I went in and re-signed and they've been calling me out.
Contracts. That's so stupid.
Yeah. But they've been putting me out and everything's good, you know?
That's great.
I went back to that. I've been back at that casting house that I fucked up at or was acting weird at. And
did you talk to them?
Well, I talked to the one girl. I haven't talked to like the main person yet.
That your agent explains it for you.
Well, that, but no, but honestly, I'm good with them there. You know what I mean? Like, so I could do that.
Are you more embarrassed of this or your height?
This. I know. Yeah, I don't care. I don't care that I'm not the tallest.
I know a lot of guys that do.
That I'm not the tallest knife in the drawer.
I'll tell you. You know?
I'm 4'9". I'm 5'4", you piece of shit.
Well, cool. Yeah, whatever.
You thought I was 4'9"?
No, I didn't really.
But no, I mean, I'm like, you know, I think about it like this. Like, it's weird. Like, I think that if you're constantly, people that are constantly, like, referencing their height, whether they be tall or short, or referencing their weight, whether they be skinny or fat, people are more aware of it then.
You're the one making them think about it. Yeah.
You just sort of know people. Like, all the people I interact with, that's, they're not like, oh, you know, John's not tall or whatever. Plus, like, I'm like, think about it. Like, I'm like the same height as David Tell, but you're never like, oh.
What? Oh, you're bald.
And some kids are trying to get a ball in the rat poison gate. Thank you. And
I
had to have it with girls.
It doesn't do anything. You just talk into it. It's like talking regular. Yeah. You're just talking into a different thing. How old are you? You're so short. You're the short. I guess that makes sense then.
No, he's not.
How old is he?
He's nine.
He's nine. He lied about 2 years. No, we have to do this.
We'll get
you guys afterwards. You can talk about your handball situation. Are you wearing an Aussie shirt?
That's cool.
Oh, maybe I'll play Crazy Train for this for this
We are singing the song.
Soul Train.
Yeah, Night Train and Soul Train. All has to be all train songs.
All train songs for these guys.
Peace Train.
Yeah.
West Train.
North Train.
South Train.
This is all very good.
Ravioli Train.
I'd get on that train.
Yeah. Sounds like there'd be a lot of good ravioli on there. Well, what do you have to say? What's your name?
Two of my friends are winning handball.
Nice. Cool, man.
All right.
my name is Dante.
Your name's what?
My name's Dante.
That's a nice name.
My name is Dante.
What's up, Dante?
Peace out, Dante. He seemed weird. He also had cross eyes. He was looking at me, and then I was like, what are you looking at? And then I realized, oh, there's only one eye is looking at me.
Yeah. But, you know.
Two of his friends are winning at handball.
Good to know.
I mean, I guess it's the guy with the handball gloves. That's why. It wasn't weird gloves. It was handball gloves. He's a fucking killer. Do you have any thoughts on this before we go? I'm trying to think what else we should talk about it.
I don't know. It's just
what are the parts of the experience do you want to, like, do you think people don't know?
Let's see. Told the story of getting arrested, right? I told the story of...
Explain how it is to check into a place.
Thought I hacked the bank, yeah. I mean, this is okay. This is what's interesting. So every time that I've been in the psychiatric hospital, most people in there are like, you know, like really in a depressed state and stuff like that. So the fact that I'm in a manic state when I'm in there is interesting.
Hey guys, come on.
Yeah.
Get out of bed. Let's go for a party.
No, like this is true. And I promise you I'm not indulging this at all. I am a very like helpful for people when I'm there. Yeah. Like I'm very like you know, like I'm very, I guess I don't know if I'm very like emotionally aware or something, or I'm very, I have all of this kind of, yes, it's like untethered and erratic, but there's a lot of kind of like positive energy and stuff like that.
Is there popularity at the ward?
Yeah, dude.
Like, guys are more popular than others?
Like, my aunt and cousin came to visit me, and then they told me after, like, dude, they were like, you were, like, holding court in there. You know what I mean? Like, I'm there, everybody's, like, sitting around me. Yeah, there's, like, cliques, and there's, like, the...
Wow.
Totally, dude. Like, basically, this place, Lenox Hill, this hospital on the Upper East Side, is a fucking amazing place. It's, like, a great... It's like they have like a big like VHS collection and stuff like that. Like,
oh, really?
Really good movie. They had like the Doors movie there. You know what I mean? They had Apocalypse Now, which is really weird to have in a psychiatric hospital. There's all sorts of good movies. So it's like,
have you seen the one with the Indian? What's that one called? With Jack Nicholson? When he's in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
Oh, yeah. They didn't have that there, but I've seen that.
How accurate is that?
No, come on.
Not at all.
Nurse Hatchet and shit, whatever.
Yeah.
Ratchet, whatever. But
there's not like mean orderlies and...
No.
Okay.
No, everybody was all right. No, the place in Queens was fucking rough. The state hospital in Queens was fucking rough. But this place, Lenox Hill, it's not a private hospital, but still, it's like really well. It's really good. Like the staff there is amazing. It's cool. But you meet all sorts of interesting people. There's one guy who's like this famous like designer. He's there because he's super depressed. Another guy who is like, you know, like in like radio production was in there because he was like experiencing like some alcoholism later in his life or something. So he was there. There was this like there was like a girl who was like, you know, almost OD'd on like OxyContin and shit like that. You know what I mean? So like it's all like NYU student, like all sorts of people in there, and we're helping each other to get well as much as the doctors are helping us by talking through what we're doing, not feeling bad about ourselves, you know, relating and shit like that.
That must help, too. It seems like where it's like, oh, my problem's not that. There's 30 other really big problems in here that I don't have.
That's the thing. The thing in the Queens place, there were some super low-functioning people there, so that was, like, a shit show. And I was on, like, the Asian floor.
You stepped on my board. What an asshole.
What a dick.
Just yelling at people, you stepped on my board. That's what you do with it. You step on boards.
You step on boards, bro. But the one in the Queens one, Elmhurst State Hospital, is terrible. Like, the bed was, like, essentially, like, a gym mat. You know what I mean? The food was awful. The people were...
The food must be better or worse, depending on where.
Yeah, the food is still not great at Lenox Hill.
Have you ever heard the Eels song, Hospital Food?
Oh, I love Eels, but no, I haven't heard that one.
It's, like, everything bad happened to him, so he spent a lot of time in a hospital. Like, someone died, someone else had cancer.
Oh, wow.
And he had
this
upbeat song about hospital food.
That guy's amazing, dude.
Yeah, he is.
But I mean, you're with other people helping to make them well. But the, yeah, the, when I was in the one in Elmhurst in Queens, there was there was one floor that was called the Asian floor because all of the people that worked on it were like fresh off the boat Asian women.
Really?
That would just scream at you all the time. It was so fucking stressful. It was like the
opposite. Our culture doesn't relate to each other way.
Yeah. You should not be my caretaker right now. You're freaking me out. It was like, it was terrible. It's just a terrible fucking experience. But this place, Lenox Hill, is fucking great. And like, I don't know. I mean, I met some people there, like, dude, that, you know, and vice versa, but they were like, thank you. Like, you made the stay here bearable. Like, fun.
You're a comic,
like,
too.
I'm a comic, you know what I mean? Like, I'm being funny, I'm interesting, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, I've done a lot of good.
People don't know, comics are actually, like, if you can get us normalized, if you can get us feeling okay and safe, we're pretty entertaining.
Oh, come on, we're great, dude. Yeah.
Me and Nick Youssef were on the back of we were in a shuttle doing Outside Lands in San Francisco, and we were just getting a shuttle somewhere else. And then somebody in the back, some musicians were there and whatever, and they were like, does anybody know a good story? And somebody told some shitty story, and then I was like, I have a bit. But, I mean, I do it. It's a story, but I've done it on my album. And I was like, yeah, that's this one time. And I just went into this, like, 12-minute long, like, great story just to, like, six people in the back of the shuttle van. And it was so much fun. And they're like, that's an amazing story.
Of course, dude. I mean,
comics are cool.
I do well with people. People like me. You know what I mean? I'm social.
I'm not one of those comedians. If I can feel okay and safe.
I'm not one of those comedians that's like a social fucking nightmare. You know?
Yeah.
I'm not like that.
I am. I get uncomfortable.
But you put, really? Well, I guess I know you as another comedian. I guess I know you as another comedian.
Oh, other comics, I'm okay with that. I was thinking about this last night. I was talking to Attel, and he was talking about different people try to talk to him when he's out at the cellar.
Yeah.
And he goes, it's comics. That's who it is. I can tell they look up to new comics or are about to get into comedy. They look up to me, and that's why. He goes, I can just tell who they are.
Yeah.
But what was I going to say? This is when I realized on the way home. I was like, all my friends, except for a few that I have from high school before, are comics.
Absolutely.
I can't even be friends with a non-comic.
Well, that's what happens. I mean, so much of our social life and our work life is completely
I know, but I'll meet cool people. Unless I'm dating somebody, that's the only chance. If I meet some cool people after a show, some dudes, let's say two dudes, and I get into an interesting conversation.
It's not
And then they're like, hey, we're going to go here next for a drink. And I might have talked to them for half an hour.
Yeah.
I'll be like, oh, okay, have a good time. I don't even think that being friends with you is even a possibility. It's like, you're not a comic. And it's not even like thought out in my head.
I just
couldn't even imagine it.
Yeah.
Enjoy your life. I'll be here doing comedy.
I've got a few, but not many. You know what I mean?
All my friends, all the people, like, how come we never hang out? Much. It's like, because I'm actually, want to hang out at the store with me?
Yeah.
You can hang out at the store.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to be into that.
Yeah, I'm not going somewhere.
It was
going
to be fun for you once as a novelty.
Yeah, exactly.
And then after that, you're going
to
be like,
every girlfriend's like, how come you don't invite me to shows? I'm like, fine, come to shows. After two times, they're like, I don't want to go to these shows anymore. It's like, that's why I don't invite you.
Exactly.
It's not for you.
But no, dude, I mean, here I am, man.
Yeah, you're still here.
I'm still fucking here,
dude. For the grace of God. There, but for the grace of God.
I'm fucking resilient, dude. You know what I mean? I'm surviving, and I feel good. And I think this is going to be
there have been people that have died over this stuff, right? Entered into a bad situation.
It can happen. I mean, I could have died. I walked across this bridge this one time.
Really?
Yeah.
Through traffic?
Yeah.
Where you thought I couldn't be hit?
No, I thought, like, it was all this. It was like this whole, like, Karl Rove weather control machine situation. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, of course.
It was one of those. You know?
Sure. Oh, yeah. Weekday shit.
Oh, Ari. How you doing, man?
I'm pretty great. I'm really liking New York.
Yeah?
I'm really liking it here.
That's what we do after 2 hours talking. I just go, so how you doing? Let's just get into it. Let's start the podcast.
I usually go on, like, tangents, but this is all, like, centered to, here's your money. I have money for you.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Sponsors.
Oh, that's fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's way better, right?
Yeah. Are we still doing it? Are we still on?
Yeah, we're still on.
Okay.
What the hell? Oh, I put it here.
Thank you. That's so unexpected and so unnecessary.
Not unnecessary.
Amazing.
Necessary. I get sponsors. You got to kick some back to the comics.
No, that's great. For you. Is this your own thing now? Is this?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's easy to do. You see the setup. No, you can just go anywhere. Take a train, meet somebody, and do it.
No, but it's good. There's a lot of podcast.
Yeah, it's like a self-sustaining little industry for myself. I was like, I can just do the things that I need to get draw. Are you going to be anywhere coming up? Stand up on the road at all? Or big shows in New York?
Well, the show that I do that I want to plug is it's really fun. It's a weekly show at this place called Cobra Club.
Cobra Club, where?
It's in Bushwick, right off the Jefferson L, 6 Wyckoff Avenue, every Friday at 9. It's really fun. I do it with Eric Bergstrom and Ben Kronberg, who are two of my favorite comics. You know?
Yeah.
And, we're doing something cool in this kind of new fun part of Bushwick. So.
All right, rad.
Some really interesting stuff. It's called Live from Outer Space.
Is the name of the show?
Yeah.
What's the name of the bar?
Cobra Club.
Cobra Club at 9 p.m. on Fridays.
Yeah, yeah.
In Bushwick. That's cool. Yeah. Tons of people live out here that won't go into Manhattan. That do on occasion, but people just don't.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's happening. People are making their own lives out here.
Yeah.
Like, they'll live out here. There's a lot of social stuff going on. They'll go to, like, Williamsburg or whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Maybe if they go into the city, they'll go to the East Village or Lower East Side. Where else are they going to go?
Yeah, but it's also they do it once in a while. Same thing with the Valley in L.A.
Yeah.
People are like, oh, they'll just come here. They don't. They don't go over the hill.
Yeah.
They do it once a year.
Yeah. So that.
All right. That's cool.
And people can go to livefromouterspace.com, download my albums if they want to check out my comedy.
Sure, they should do that. Why not? Pay what you want, too. My poor fans can pay what they want. And that's awesome. What I tell people with my CD and stuff or my special. I'm like, get it the way you get things.
Yeah, fuck it.
I know,
I'd rather have it out there.
I bought one song in my life.
Yeah.
So it's like certain people get it the way, however you get things, you should get it.
Yeah, I feel exactly the same way.
It's like you want them So, I mean, like, artists don't get mad when somebody goes to see their painting for free in a museum.
Yeah, it's like our show, Cobra Club. It's $5 suggested donation. I'd much rather have you go see it. But if you have a little bit of cash flow, go for it. Throw it to us.
And people do?
Yeah. Yeah.
People pay?
Yeah, make some cash.
There's a show in San Diego that it's just like at the Palace, I think. People just pay what they want, and everyone stands outside afterwards, and they all just put the money in the comics. They each make like $100-something.
Yeah, we do okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Fuck it, you know?
That's cool. And livefromouterspace.com is your website.
Yeah.
All right, rad. Yeah, man. That's cool. Thanks. I think I might have known a lot of more people that I thought were schizophrenic that were manic. I think I...
Yeah, it's different. Fortunate that I'm manic depressive. I have bipolar disorder compared to being schizophrenic. Yeah. Schizophrenia can be very kind of like debilitating, can be pretty debilitating. You know what I mean?
Did you ever see any bad psychiatrist, I forget which one does what, that told you had something else?
Honestly, no. They nailed it as manic depression from the beginning. But I'll tell you one thing. When I was in the hospitals last time, I was interacting with this guy, this brilliant guy. His name's John Clark. He's like a poet.
Yeah.
And also like a computer programmer guy, but it's like a poet like he's like an older guy, like a poet in like the 50s in the city and stuff like that, like, you know, like new Jack Kerouac shit like that, right?
Yeah.
And he was like he's schizophrenic, and he was like in the thick of it, right? But like I interacted with him a lot, and you know, we saw him over a couple weeks starting to get better, and he like
at the hospital
okay. And he recited to us some of his poems, right? And I like wrote it down verbatim. And then this girl, Sarah, this NYU girl that was in the hospital, like she made this really cool like piece of like original art out of the poem, like out of this, like, because there were like games there, like out of this, like, not like a checkerboard, but like a baccarat board or some sort of like board, like that was like kind of neon colored, and then like in like different like Scrabble tiles and all sorts of all different things, like
with
and cut out letters from like ads and stuff, so almost like that ransom style.
The
that is the whole poem, and I have that at my apartment.
Oh wow, that's cool.
Yeah,
I'd like to see that at some point.
And it reminded me, I have to text her because she said she was going to come out to the show. We've been meaning to hang out, and for whatever reason, and she made me this bracelet. And for whatever reason,
you keep in touch with
people. For whatever reason, I haven't taken it off.
You keep in touch with people.
A couple people sometimes. Okay. You know what I mean? Yeah. This one guy, Carl, was great, and he called me. I should have called him back. He just moved to California. Older guy, but great. But I'll call him at some point. You know what I mean?
Do you guys feel like survivor mentality sometimes? Like we went through this together.
Totally.
Yeah.
There's definitely a kinship there, for sure. I mean, it's like, dude,
send me a picture. How do you not feel?
I will.
Get like a picture of it, and I'll put it up on the site when I put this out.
Okay.
But do it soon, because I'm out of podcast, so this is going up on Monday.
Okay.
I can usually just, like, I have some saved up.
Just like text it to you or whatever? Or like, okay.
Yeah.
I think I actually have one on my phone. Actually, yeah. I'll show it to you if you want.
Yeah, let me see it.
It's going to take me a minute to find it.
Take me a minute to find it. How does that feel?
Yeah.
Not as good.
You want to wrap it up, get something to eat or something?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, cool.
Where are we? What park is this?
Maria Hernandez.
Okay.
This is nice.
Yeah.
It's way cold now, though, by the way.
It is. It is.
All right, Rad. Thanks, John.
You got it. Thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it. Hospital food.
Boom, everybody. That's the episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Why is letting the clock run down? Call a timeout, Cowboys. It's already over. They're not scoring 9 points in 90 seconds. So that's the episode. Thank you for John F. O'Donnell. I did not know all that. And what I really think is, from what I hear, is that what I thought was schizophrenia is probably manic episodes. Maybe I don't know the difference. There's this one schizo guy that I wanna interview. That I've known a long time. He's semi-homeless. So if I get that, maybe we can see a difference. But I have to get him in a real clear way because he's barely ever clear. Like John is talking to me from O'Donnell was talking to me from a very clear place. Yeah, this guy would not. But yeah, I'll try to do it. Anyway, all right, you guys, thank you for tuning in. I hope you guys subscribe. Tell your friends about it. Don't forget to hit the fucking Amazon link to shop for shit. Don't forget to watch Squidbillies, the best show on... No, it's not. But it's a really great show on Cartoon Network. I'm not getting sponsored. You should get them. And Auntie Dolores, ask for them in your local dispensaries in California. Ask for Auntie Dolores edibles. They're wonderful. And thank you, Dee, for sending me a great pot cookie. Sent me a giant pot cookie. I thought she was going to be sending pot cookies to my what's it called address? To my post office address? No, it's not post office. Mailbox address. I have a mailbox address in New York so people can send me shit if they want to. It was Duncan Trussell's idea. He's like, dude, people want to send you little things, so send it. So somebody sent me a t-shirt, which it was too busy. I can't wear it, but thank you. Somebody sent me an enema and douche all in one. I don't know who that was from, but that's hilarious. For the $9 it cost you plus shipping. yeah, good one. And then that giant pot cookie. It was one of those giant, like, Mrs. Fields cookie. I thought she was going to send me a bunch. So with one big one, it's like the size of a table. Size of, like, a personal... No, bigger than a personal pizza. Like, than a small one. Yeah, I brought it to the stand, and everybody got cacked out on pot cookie. Fun times. The whole wait staff. We waited till last call, officially. We officially waited till last call. And then, everyone had a good time on it. So thanks, D. You sponsored a great evening at the stand in New York. All right, you guys. Thanks for tuning in. Tell a friend about it. And if you have any suggestions for topics or podcast guests, don't suggest yourself. But if you have suggestions. And that guy in Austin, I want to talk to you. That guy you contacted me last time I was in Austin. We didn't have time. When I'm there in November, hit me up again. I don't know how to get in touch with you. I want to do the thing about what we talked about. That'll be a good one. You can either hit me on Twitter or at my website address from the website, contact@arishafir.com. Or you can mail me at the mailbox address. It's on contacts on the website. All right, you guys. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing it with your friends. I'm glad you guys enjoy it. Goodbye. Oh, and this was my favorite. This is my favorite commercials for, and I think it's apt here. One of my favorite commercials from when I was growing up. So, for John F. O'Donnell, for Ari Shaffir, Skeptic Tank, episode 135 or 4 or 5 or 4 though. Maniac, I couldn't think of a better name than that, but I like it anyway. Thank you for tuning in, everybody, and now enjoy one of my favorite podcasts from the 80s. 134. It's 134 from the 80s. Thank you, John O'Donnell. Skeptic 135. No. Skeptic 134. Maniac with J Fod. Comedy over and out. Oh, and by the way, the Storyteller Show taping, recording, I guess it's not tape anymore, that's free. There's no cover charge and there's no drink minimum. It's a bar. You can get drinks and do. Why not? Get a couple drinks in you. Have some fun. But it's free, so it's going to be one of the coolest shows in the fucking world, you guys. You're going to get all six comics plus myself for that first show, and we need people there. So make reservations, come out, bring some friends that are cool, and come out and hear some cool stories from degenerate comedians and some people from the Whitest Kids You Know. Yeah, so come out, please. Make a reservation and come out. It'll be really fun. I'm not begging you. Just come out. And I wouldn't suggest getting too high beforehand because some of these stories are like, most of them are like 10 minutes. So you lose sense of where you're headed when you're too stoned. But, you know, take a toke or two. Don't go crazy. But, you know, when I say don't go crazy, I mean don't not smoke at all. But also don't go crazy. Don't smoke like three bowls by yourself before you come in. All right, you guys, thank you very much. Those of all you, I'll see Tuesday. It's Cheetahs it's on Hollywood right near Vermont. I think right west of Vermont. And yeah, I'm excited. Should be really fun. All right. Yeah, I get excited about a little. Be a perfect vacation when I'm done planning all this shit. All right, thanks for tuning in, you guys. It's episode 134, Maniac, with John O'Donnell, over and out. That was not sped up. That was regular time.
I know a boy, his name is Zach. He loves to fit, he loves to stack. Yes, construction is his knack. He's Zach, the Lego Maniac. He builds in the window, he's off the wall. He builds them big, he builds them small. In Legoland, he'll rock and roll. He's Lego wild, out of control. Zach, he's a Lego Maniac. Zach.
Legoland, King's Castle, Airport, Cosmic Fleet Voyager, sold separately from Lego System.